Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. All right. Well, it's Friday, and it's cold out there still. Hopefully that'll be changing in the next few weeks as we get into March. You know, it always seems like the year's going by really fast. But when I look at it, it's going fast because, you know, I'm busy, and if you're busy, it's going by fast. If you're not busy, it's probably going by painfully slowly. But at this point, we're sort of creeping up on mid-February, and which is fine with me because, you know, once we get to the end of February, beginning of March, the weather starts to warm up. And, of course, by mid to late March, you know, back in the summer again, you know, here in beautiful downtown Florida. So I'm here in Milton on the banks of the full Blackwater River, Milton, Florida, near Pensacola, if you're trying to find out where I am, because we're getting more and more international. If Alan can join us, and Alan's a busy guy, he's down in Belize. If he can join us, he probably will in the next few minutes. And if not, that's okay too, because I've got plenty to talk about this morning as well. We have a special guest, Jeanette Sharp, who's going to be joining Shirley Wattrell for her report, and that's going to be in about half an hour. And so that's kind of exciting. We've got the title of the show, Guns, Competitions, and Rights. And so Jeanette is from New Zealand. And it's an amazing coincidence that I'm trying to connect with people from New Zealand right now because of what's happening with their truck convoy. We had the most amazing, oh, see, there's Alan. Okay. We had the most amazing connection yesterday with Jen Clark from Australia, who's now driving. She's probably already there, but she's in Canberra, which is the capital. It's not Canberra, you know, just for all of you who aren't as familiar. It's Canberra. And so we spent almost 2 hours working on ideas, talking about the problems of COVID in Australia, the mandates, everything else. And I think one of the greatest revelations is that we talked about working on a Bill of Rights for Australia to add it to their constitution, because there's no provision for individual rights in the Australian constitution. And the idea that, you know, Australians, you know, a shrimp on the barbie, laid back, you know, have a Foster's, let's talk about the weekend people, all of a sudden, you know, descending on Canberra, just as Canadians, you know, bacon, hockey, and maple syrup people, you know, have descended on Ottawa. And we haven't quite descended on Belize yet, but we'll see what's going on down there because Alan's checking in with us. But normally peaceful, calm people have been really pissed off by their governments. And I'm trying to understand what this seductive attraction to power is, why these people are so stupid and so disgusting and so over-controlling that they think that the greater glory, you know, for them lies in controlling people and making them do things that they don't want to do that are bad for them anyway. I mean, this kind of contradiction is insane. It's not like the governments in Canada, Australia, and France, and Israel, and everywhere else in the world, our own, you know, of course ours was stolen, that's a different story, but it's not like these governments are actually trying to do something good. You know, the mandates, lockdowns, masks, school closures, beach closures, you know, forced snake oil jabs, you know, that are killing people far more than COVID. Yeah, I said it. Okay, what are you going to do about it? All right, you know, and all these things are happening, and yet these governments are insane, and they're just carrying on. Trudeau's, oh, those people are racists. They're insurrectionists. They don't have a say. It's not their country. It's my country. Alan, reporting from beautiful downtown Belize City in the tropical paradise of Belize. How are you this morning, sir?
Good morning, Action Radio. Good morning from beautiful Belize in the heart of Central America. I'm doing fine. Yeah.
Oh, good. How's your weather down there? Because we're about 36 right now. I think it's going up to like 60-something today. So we're actually going to – it's warming up a little bit. But go ahead. Make me feel bad. What's the temperature there?
Well, we're looking at 69 degrees right now presently. And okay. It's going to warm up to 80 degrees Fahrenheit at about 1 o'clock today.
See, I was looking at your climate over the course of the year. The average temperature, I think it's – this is folks are going to be really disgusted. It's about 75 in the winter and about 80 in the summer. It's so ridiculous. Is that because of the ocean breezes that you get this really nice climate? Or because it's never really too hot. I mean, it can get too hot, especially if you're inland. But if you're anywhere near the coast, I imagine it's pretty comfortable year-round.
Oh, yeah, pretty much. We get a brisk southeasterly wind year round, and then of course November to February, then we get the cooler temps. And nice. this year we went down to 57 degrees. That was our coolest for this year. But yeah, mm-hmm. cooler months to be here November through February. Rest of the year, yeah, usually between 80 to 90 degrees, you know, year round.
Yeah, 90 is okay. Much above 90, and I get kind of upset, but I can take it up to about 90. 80s, you know, 70s are my, I guess 60s, 70s are my favorite temperature. In San Francisco, we was really blessed to have, you know, 55 in the winter and 65 to 70 in the summer. I mean, it's just an incredible climate there because of the fog. Oh, yeah. Everything else is screwed up. Yeah, the weather's pretty good, but everything else in San Francisco screwed up. So I was thinking, you're former British Honduras, and Britain's on the metric system. Are you on the metric and you're just converting for me for temperature, or are you still on the British system?
No, we actually not on the British system. Yeah, we were a British colony, but yeah, we do everything like you. Feet and inches, pounds and ounces, miles.
Okay, that is the British system. So Britain's on the metric system. We're on the British system here in the United States, which is kind of funny. So when the rest of the world changed, we never did. Which is kind of funny, but we didn't. We're still on, you know, pounds, inches, you know, Fahrenheit, and all that other kind of crazy stuff. Okay, well, that's interesting. Now, how about the rest of Central America? Is anybody else on the metric, or are they old British system for measurements?
You know what? I think most of them do the metric systems.
Okay. Yeah, so you got to go from... Yeah, so all the speed limits change. All of a sudden, the speed limits are a lot faster. You think, this is great. I can go 70 kilometers, but it's really like, you know, 52 miles an hour. It's not that good. You know. But my favorite measurement, and this is what I got from flying, you know, nautical miles. You know, I'd love to see the world in nautical miles. And people are like, Greg, what the hell are you talking about this for? Well, let me explain. Okay, there's usually a reason for everything I say, despite the absurdity of which I started. But nautical miles, a nautical mile is 1 minute of latitude. So you can divide up the whole world geographically, speed, coordinates, GPS, everything in nautical miles, because nautical miles correspond directly to the Earth's navigation system of degrees, minutes, and seconds. And the reason you use latitude is because latitudes are parallel. They don't change. Longitude, the distance between longitudinal meridians latitude parallels, longitude changes because it goes from pole to pole. So the longitude degrees are widest at the equator, and they're nothing at the poles. They're gone. And so it's interesting. So longitude, you can't use for that. That's why longitude is based on time. Whereas latitude is consistent. The parallels are based on the equator. And so the degrees, if you divide the Earth up into 360 degrees, of latitude, you've got 180 north, 180 south. You divide those degrees into, you know, 60 parts. Each degree is 60 parts. That's a minute of latitude. Well, that minute of latitude, 1/60th of a degree, is a nautical mile. So, you know, if we really wanted to standardize measurement, you know, and airplanes use nautical miles. Ships have always used nautical miles because they measure their speed in knots, which is nautical miles per hour. And so if we really want to get a universal system, I would convert everything to knots, because when I thought in knots, you know, when I was flying, especially, you know, flying by myself, trying to find my way around New England at 16, you know, in my little Cessna 150, I could understand the world better because the chart, the degrees corresponded with the mileage. I don't know where we got statue from. Uh-huh. Idiot probably just made it up. Yeah, what do you think of that? That'd be an interesting a world standard. Everybody just go to nautical miles. So
that's
now 45 miles an hour is like 70.
I always thought that nautical thing was interesting, but I never understood it. So that was you shed a little bit of light on that this morning. Thanks, Greg.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, it's just, you never know where my mind's going to wander. Yeah, like I say, between God and ADHD, you know, we can tend to keep the show going. I want to get into this. There's a nasty thing you kind of told me, you know, between our last visits, and that's the whole idea of being able to get a visa. And as much as you want to share, I'm really disgusted that you can't get a visa into the United States, having come here as often as you've come here. You can speak about your situation, or you can speak more generally about it. But what the hell's going on with our country under Brandon the insurrectionist, you know, Brandon the First, that you can't come here as a, you know, honest, law-abiding, productive citizen, you know, from Belize, which is, I would assume, an ally of ours, being, you know, like I say, former British, you know, Commonwealth, independent country, you know, freedom, democracy, all that kind of stuff, which is actually a republic. Well, I'll ask if you're a democracy or a republic later. But what the hell's going on with travel?
Let's see. The Holland America ships, they start to come now. That's
okay,
European travelers. So right. That's good. We used to do a tour with the European lines that they bring only German speakers. So we have a little audio thing that we run for the tour. And then we have like a few minutes where we can chip in our own in German language parts of the city tour. And that was interesting because we had to take a beginner's course and then intermediate course in German. So I do speak a little. I can give a city tour in
German. But you give it with a Belize accent. Yeah, sprechen Sie Deutsch, man. Yeah.
Exactly.
Have a good time here in Belize, man.
People are pretty fascinating when you are trying to speak your language. So that was interesting.
Because most Germans speak English.
But they're coming back. Huh?
Most Germans speak English. That's the funny part. Germany was one of the easiest countries to get around because they all speak English. They all learn English in schools.
Yeah, that's true. But I noticed a lot of the ones that that would travel, they're the older people that travel, right?
Right.
A lot of the Europeans, they're the seniors. And I would talk to a lot of them, like greeting them before boarding. And most of them, yes, will talk to me in English, will answer in English. But a lot of them, they said no, they didn't speak English.
Oh, so they're just being arrogant. They just don't want to talk to you.
It could be. Yeah, it could be. But it was an interesting tour, and we're happy to receive them back. So the first ship came yesterday, but these were all English speakers. It wasn't the audio. We didn't have to use the audio recording yesterday in German. This was all English speaker, but on the Holland America lines.
But where they speak Dutch.
mm-hmm.
Yeah, Holland. I took my daughter to Alaska on Holland America, and we had the best time. There was the Eagle's Nest, Crow's Nest, whatever it was called. I think it was Crow's Nest bar, and the forefront of the ship up there, above the bridge. And we were there every night. And normally it's like an adult, disco dance club kind of thing. But I talked to the DJ and we talked to everybody. And said, let's let the kids in. So we had kids dancing with 80-year-olds. Everybody danced with everybody. We had so much fun. It was every night. So we go, we do our tours, we do all our separate family things, we go venture around. But there was a group of about 50 to 100 of us that would gather up in the Crow's Nest every night, and we danced the night away.
Wow.
And everybody, like I said, everybody was dancing with everybody, from people from around the world. And, half of us didn't speak the same language. We didn't care. We just had this really great time up in Alaska on this cruise ship, with the grizzly bears on land and the humpback, grizzly bears to our right, humpbacks to our left. here we are, up the inland waterway, go the crazy people on Holland America. It was the Volendam. It was a beautiful ship, mid-sized ship. Now, the Holland America, the good thing about Holland America is that they have mid-sized ships. The biggest ships can't go up the inland waterway. So if you want to travel to Alaska, and you should definitely go, if you haven't already, but if you want to travel to Alaska, take a mid-sized ship because they can take the inland waterway. And the inland waterway is where the action is. It's like you're going up a river. And so the inland waterway
where
is protected.
Where the bigger ships.
That's where
the bigger ships can't go, right?
That's right. So I think like 2,000 passengers and above, they can't go there. And so you're out to sea, and you're not really seeing Alaska. You're seeing the ocean. You're seeing the Alaskan Ocean, which is not a whole, or the Arctic Ocean. It's not really a whole lot of fun compared to actually going up the inland waterway, which is this sheltered island barrier waterway. But I mean, you can see land the whole way. And like I say, it's like being on a river, and you can see grizzlies, on the shoreline. As you're passing by, you can like wave at the grizzlies. Go, oh, wow, there's a big predator. Oh boy, And when I say humpback whales, I mean I used to play guitar, on the porch in the mornings because my kid was lazy. She wouldn't get up on time. I'm an early riser. I just don't like, I'm like an early riser, afternoon napper, late night person. So I kind of, a lot of times I'll sleep twice a day, which is kind of weird, but it works. Anyway, so I'm out playing guitar on the porch. And of course the different cabins, they're listening too. I'm singing and playing my guitar. And all of a sudden these humpbacks, about 50 yards out to sea, come up and spray. And we're like, oh my God, this is really cool. So it was like me, the sunrise, the clouds, I'm playing my guitar, the humpbacks are there, the passengers
there
around me going, oh wow. I mean, it was magic. It really was magic.
Yeah.
So yeah.
That's life.
So let's get you up to Alaska.
That's real life. You know what, Greg, let me tell you. Before my late wife passed, we were going to celebrate our 25th anniversary, and I was planning an Alaska cruise for that year.
Wow.
And we should have been going around like July, August. Some friends that cruise there told us those are like the best months to go. And she left me in January. And there
I am so sorry about that. Yeah, I am so sorry. But
yeah,
I'll tell you what, you should still go, though. You should still go because A, she would want you to go. And B, she's probably going to be with you in spirit as you go anyway. I mean, you can have some nice chats.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you're up there on the deck by yourself and, you know, you'll she'll be there. You know, I'm convinced of that. So I think you should still go.
Plan. It's still in my plans to do it.
Okay.
Good. You know what? This trip that I was planning, I was going to land in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to do a road trip over to California, to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
That was my itinerary this time.
Get your kick
unfortunately,
on Route 66.
But you know what, Greg? In the end, I look at it like this. I look at it like mm-hmm. this because, you know, I'm a God-fearing person. I read the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to the time when there will be no more corrupt governments in this world, no more evil, no more borders. No more hospital, no more sickness. And that time is coming soon. So I look forward to that time. No more need for a passport, no more need for a visa. And we can travel this entire world, and we'll have forever. We will have forever.
Well, I think you hit upon the biggest thing is government. I don't mind borders. I don't mind the fact that there are people, you know, that believe in their country. And like I believe in America first. You know, in other words, not to the detriment or to the destruction of anybody else. But in other words, we, you know, as Americans, we should look out for our own interest, and that is to make us a prosperous country. To actually limit our immigration and make it impossible for illegal aliens to live here. And do the things that help us in the same way that you should do the things that help Belize and help Belizeans. You know, everybody should do that.
Yeah.
But the problem is not borders, because borders actually, you know, that's why neighbors have fences. You know, fences make for good neighbors. You know, you got your side and I got my side. Yeah, we can meet. Yeah, we can do dinner. We can
mm-hmm.
visit each other, but we don't live with each other.
Yeah.
You know, you can't come over, you know, to my place and just set up shop, you know, and that's the difference.
Yeah.
So there's a certain, it's something about the human condition, but the problem I have, and this is what I'm pretty much dedicating, you know, the rest of my life to fighting, is the idea that people think that the world will be better if they have control over other people. And see, that's the problem. The problem is the people that go into government as opposed to, I mean, people that go into business, you know, they want to make money, they want to invent something, they want to do, you know, like me, Action Radio. Yeah, I want to make some money at this. Absolutely. Because I'm devoting a whole lot of time to it. I want to have fun. You know, there's a car I want and there's a jet I want. Okay, so that's just me personally.
Yeah.
But the big goal, that's secondary. The main goal is to create a situation where anybody in the world can write laws and submit them to their own government and say, this is how we consent to be governed. That is a fundamental change in everything. It's a change in the relationship of the citizen to the government. It's a change in the empowerment of the citizen. I had this amazing talk yesterday. If you get a chance, you know, please listen to my talk with Jen Clark in Australia. So here we have this incredible situation now where I have the technology to sit at my desk here, turn on my computer, talk to Jen in Australia. Cindy Cagle joined us. Our medical freedom reporter joined us. I'm here in Florida. Jonathan Mosley's up in Virginia near Washington. He was on the line. All of us are on the line together. You know, and in this incredible spirit of freedom, and everybody's doing the same thing, trying to throw off the government, idiots, morons, corrupt individuals that think the world's a better place if they're in charge. And it's simply not. We elect them there to be administrators. We elect them there to perform services, fill the potholes, you know, keep the border secure, you know, defend the country in war, you know, and the rest of the time, shut the hell up and go away. You know, don't start meddling in things that are none of your damn business. And the problem is they're always meddling in things that are none of their damn business.
Yes.
And the fact that you can't travel
yes.
here really pisses me off. I'm upset that, you know, so your ability to come to the United States, is that a Belize problem, a U.S. government problem, or both? What's going on here? Like I say, if you want to tell me. If you don't, just tell me. Mind my own business. I understand that. But what's the story as much as you can tell? I'm curious.
I think it's their. I don't think Belize has to do with their decision. I don't think
okay.
so. I think that's their decision. They make their decision based on my circumstance. My circumstance has changed. I am no longer a married man. I'm a widower. I am single. So no, I'm going to the U.S. to live, and I'm going to work, and I'm going to marry an American.
And oh, that's what they think.
No, this is how I think. they make this decision this time, because this is this would have been my fifth. Listen, Greg, this would have been my fifth visa going to the U.S. I got my first visa when I was about 18 years old, and this would have been my fifth.
Were you married at 18?
No. I wasn't.
So wait a minute. If you're not married, I mean, you could have been married at 18, but here you are. You're 18 years old. You're coming to the United States, and they're not considering. Did you travel with family? Were your parents with you, or you came on your own?
I was on my own. I went there on my own.
So you're a single guy. You're 18.
I flew into San Francisco. It was my first place I flew into in the U.S. And I stayed in Monterey for 3 weeks. I stayed in Monterey, and then I came back to Belize. And then I went back the following year, and I stayed. And I stayed almost 2 years, and I was getting an extension to stay there.
Yeah.
And they refused my last extension and sent me back home. They said, you got to leave the state. I left. Yeah, I followed the law. Mm-hmm. I should have darn stayed back then, and I would have still been there today as a citizen. But I'm obedient.
Well, not really. No, you still have to apply, though. And you can apply for U.S. citizenship like anybody else, like my parents applied for it.
I know the process.
You know, yeah, it's it. But the problem is now with Brandon. Now, here's the problem, though. All these folks that think they're coming in now, I have news for them. I have a feeling that it's not going to work out as well in the long term as they think, because Americans are really disgusted with the fact that we're going to have 2 million illegal people showing up in our country. See, what people fail to understand, immigration is not for immigrants. Okay? It's not our job to provide a place for anybody outside the United States to come. The job, the reason for immigration is to make life better for Americans. Same thing with Belize.
Right.
Anybody that immigrates, what? Right? Isn't that right?
Yes. You're right, Greg.
Okay. So in other words, if people want to come to Belize, the first consideration is, are you going to help Belize by being here? I mean, that's only self-interest. That only makes sense. That's the way it's supposed to be. I mean, I can't go to France and become a citizen of France just because I want to. You know, first of all, I don't speak French, so that would they wouldn't let me in for that. You know, I mean, I took French in school. I mean, I could learn French, but that would be a prerequisite. If I ever wanted to move to France, I'd have to prove that I was there to help France. And I love France, but I don't want to live there. You know, I like visiting.
Yeah.
But the thing is, but countries, and that's perfectly normal. I would expect that. I would expect that of any country, you know, to do that. So, but travel is different. See, travel to be open. I don't believe in borders for travel. I do believe in borders for residency and for living and for working and things like that. So travel, travel is the best thing people can do. You want an education, go travel. So idea that you can't come here to travel. So I agree with the decision that, you know, unless you were applying to be a citizen here to live here permanently, that after a while your travel visa, tourist visa, it should have been ended. I mean, that's the normal thing to do. So you go back to Belize, you know, establish yourself, and then you can apply to come back again for a couple of years. That makes sense. I understand that. But that's a different question, though, as opposed to becoming a citizen. Yeah. So that's where I draw the line on that. But the fact that you can't travel, that I don't understand. You know, this reason for anybody not to be able to travel.
And I will not try to understand it anyways. In the meantime, for another year before I would ever go in to apply there again. The only reason why I never asked that lady, so excuse me, where can I go now to collect half that money that I paid to you for this application? Half that money back. I didn't do that because, you know, I'm bigger than that. She was an awesome woman. She was beautiful. She was professional, very respectful. I knew it wasn't her decision, right? So I wasn't rude to her in the end. I just told her, thanks a lot, have a nice day, and I walked out, right?
So where was this? Where was this, the American consulate, or where were you applying for your visa?
Yes. You do the application online, and then you have to usually, like in my case, it's just a renewal. I've always had a visa. You just go drop off your documents, and you go pick it up the following week.
Right.
Now, because of my changed circumstance, well, they called me up for an interview. Tuesday morning, I got an email. You need to come in. I was going. It was just hours before I left to go pick up my passport, which is an hour from where I live to the capital. I got the email. You need to come in for an interview. So I arranged. I got into the website there, put in my time, 7:30 Wednesday morning, and I went for my interview. And she asked me a couple of questions, a few from the application I did, and then a few additional questions. You ever been to the U.S. before? Yeah, many times. It's in your system. when was the what was the longest stay? I said back in 92. That's when I lived in Monterey. What's the other question? Are you married? No, I'm a widower. My wife died about 2 years ago. Okay, how many children do you have? One. Where is he? He's away right now. Where is he? In California. How long is he there for? About a year. Why is he there that long? I said, with all due respect, he's an adult. He makes his own choices. He doesn't live with me. He hasn't been living with us for the last few years. Okay, Mr. Dawson, at this point then, we can't grant you this visa this time. Here's a letter. You can find out the whatever you need for your next application. That's it.
You know, it's fascinating that our illegal government is encouraging illegal people to illegally come to our country. And a legal person, a law-abiding citizen who lost his wife 2 years ago, who's a widower, who has nothing but a stellar, you know, record in terms of honesty and you know, nothing criminal on your record. You've been working, you've been productive, you know, you're not on welfare. The fact that you can't come to the United States and these illegal bums that come here to sign up for welfare and groups like Catholic Charities and the other church charities, these NGOs are helping them. And Brandon is flying illegal aliens all over the country, sneaking them into military bases and around the country, especially into Republican districts because they want to change the vote. Oh, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on like that. And the fact that you can't visit the United States where you've been before, you've done nothing wrong. You've never overstayed a visa.
Great.
You've never done anything.
Great.
And you can't come in here? I'm sorry. That makes me mad. There's no reason for that. Yeah, go ahead.
Greg, I've run my own family business with my late wife for 14 years. You've been along escorting people with us. I took
thousands, that's how we met, folks.
Yeah, American tourists around this beautiful jewel. I've been tour guiding now for 19 years. Next month, 19 years, hauling American tourists around this country. All 5 stars reviews on TripAdvisor when we run our business. And this is what I get.
Did you send the reviews into with your visa application? I mean, I would. Wait a minute.
No. I don't need to do that. When they want to do a research on Alan Dawson, they just punch it in the internet and they'll see Alan Dawson, TripAdvisor. Boom, five stars.
You should put that on.
They do their research.
Yeah, put your reviews on our travel page. We have our cruise and travel page. You know, put those on here. I'm going to bring Shirley in the conversation here. Shirley has a guest. Jeanette Sharp will be joining us in a few minutes, I'm sure, too. Just for the fun, because I always love my reporters talking to my other reporters because it's fun. Shirley, you're on with Alan Dawson, who's been denied a visa to come visit our wonderful country, land of the free, home of the brave, you know, government of the exclusive. And I'm just disgusted. Good morning, Shirley.
Good morning. Hi, Alan. How you doing?
Morning. Good morning. You know what? I was looking forward to coming to Florida this year. Wow.
I know. So why are they saying you can't come? Why are they denying your visa? I must have missed that part.
I don't have any ties to come back to my country, in effect, in a nutshell. I don't have any ties to come back to my country just because I'm a widower now. And, yeah, I'm going to they judge me. They prejudge me just based on my changed circumstance.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. And you were born there, right?
Born and raised here, and always been traveling to the U.S. for 40 years.
Oh, wow. And who was it that traveled to California? Who's in California? Who's in the States? I didn't get. Oh, so your son's over here right now, and they think you're going to come over here and never go back?
Yeah. My son was.
They don't want you to leave.
Yeah.
Well, you've got a business and a job. Why do they say you've got no ties? You've got a job. You know, you're gainfully employed. You know, you've been at this job for a while. I forgot whether it's your own business or you're. I think you're working with someone now, but you've had your own business. You know, you've got ties. You've got family there. What do you mean no ties to Belize? That's insane.
You
speak with a Belizean accent, man. I mean, I know where you're from. You're from Belize. I can tell just by talking to you, man. I'm getting better at that.
got my parents here still, my beloved parents. My dad,
yeah.
He's doing good, you know, at 75. I take care of him. I go there every weekend, visit with them, you know.
Well, that doesn't make sense. You do have family ties there. That's crazy.
I got all my ties here.
No, they're worried, man. He's going to scoop an American babe and marry American and get a fraudulent marriage and then get citizenship. That's what they're worried about. Okay.
That's
as they let in, wait a minute, they let in 2 million illegal aliens to screw up our vote and don't let a decent person like Alan Dawson from Belize. I'm sorry, Alan.
That's pretty great.
Great.
So, I mean, Alan even speaks. Now, what's the language called there? It's a variation of English. It's and the local language. What's it? You taught me before.
It's Belize Creole. Belize Creole is K-R-I-O-L. So it's bad English or broken English. So words with E-R's, A-R's, O-R's, you drop them from words.
Okay.
Those letters, you drop them and you put a solid A at the end. So sister becomes sista. Butter becomes butta. Water becomes water. And October, November, December. October, November, December. That's Creole.
Sounds like Boston accent. Yeah, I left my cat at the yard. give us some Creole, some Belizean Creole, because it's fascinating. I mean, he did this on the tour too. So I just give us a sentence or two if you could, just because. And the reason I'm doing this is because these folks that want to deny you and say you have no ties, you speak the local native dialect of English. And the fact that you do that, this is not something people just pick up, you know, overnight. this is like any other language. It's an acquired skill. So let's have some Belizean and just to show folks what it really sounds like.
All right, they are picking to give me a lot of trouble. I mean, I know what to do with them. But I want to know what to do with them soon. Where I want to do, I want telling Grandpa how they behave. He want to take care of all of them. Don't worry about it.
Oh, perfect. I understood every word of that. Shirley, what did he say?
Could you translate that for me?
Thank you, Alan. You know, go ahead.
These children are giving me a lot of trouble, and I don't know what to do with them. But don't worry about it. I'll tell their grandparent, their grandpa, and he will take care of them. That's what I said.
Oh, good. Thank you. I appreciate the translation from English to English. Yeah, and I think there's some place in the world they speak what's called pidgin English. You know, that's probably a derogatory term. I hope I didn't insult anybody. But their English has all kinds of variations. People don't think of it. We have variations in our own country. You know, you get up into some of the Appalachian areas, you know, East Tennessee and some of the places where English takes on a whole new meaning, and the accents are so strong, I can't understand them. You know, I had one gentleman on my tour came in. I said, hey, welcome to, you know, San Francisco. Where are you from? He said, Tennessee. I said, what? He said, Tennessee. I thought, oh, Tennessee. I thought, what? It was Tennessee. I had no idea what he was saying. And then someone asked if they needed an ID. I said, what's an ID? Well, that's an ID. You know, came about Addy. I don't know what an Addy is. Help me out here. And this is you know, from the South. So you get dialects here. You got things in Boston that are tougher to understand. Or Maine. Up in Maine, you know, they talk like this, and it's a whole different thing if you got the patience to listen. Yeah. You know, and so,
Boston,
so you go around the country.
In Boston, they talk fast, too.
So do I.
The people I know in Boston, they talk fast.
Greg talk fast.
A little accent, a little fast, and you go, what?
Yeah. Yeah, it's sort of a running joke when I came here to Florida, and everybody says, you got to talk slower. And one day I just got mad. I said, well, listen faster. That did not go over well.
Greg, you're the best.
Well,
let me tell you quickly, Greg.
Yeah, go ahead. Then we'll get to Shirley.
Let me tell you quickly, because I know Shirley's time is coming up.
Okay. We merge things in. It's, you know, go ahead. Yeah. So what were you going to say?
I've done my little research on that little ship that was traveling along. And you know what? They're holding back information. They don't want to give me, nobody want to give me information. But
oh, this is fascinating.
I heard it from a little guy. He said that, my boss was telling me about it. He says the little ship came along with the Royal Caribbean Cruise Lines because they had some issues with some of their staff workers. Crew.
Oh, yeah, right. Did you get a name of a ship for me? Did you get a name? Tell me you got a name.
No. Nobody give me any information. But this little guy, he has friends that works on the tender boats that goes back and forth and bring the passengers from ship to shore.
Uh-huh. And has he got a picture? Tell me he's got a picture.
We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if they come back again with that ship next week, and he's going to get a
I love it. So you can add investigative reporter to your list, your multiple list of qualifications. This is great. Shirley, what's going on? See, Alan broke the news, I think it was last week, he broke the news that there's a hospital ship trailing the cruise ships, and they take the COVID passengers off the cruise ships because nobody has COVID on a cruise ship, right? Because they're all fully vaccinated. The crew is fully vaccinated. The passengers are fully vaccinated. It's an enclosed environment. Therefore, COVID doesn't exist on cruise ships, but of course it does. But rather than state that fact, see, they want to get the cruise ships going, but they don't want to admit that their policies are total failures. So now they're sneaking passengers off on this little hospital ship that nobody wants to talk about. But it's there. You can't hide a ship. Okay. Sorry, you can't hide a ship.
No.
And so we're trying to find out which one it is, and we're going to expose this whole thing. This has been a running investigation for a week. Shirley, what do you think?
Oh, I'm sure Alan's going to figure it out. I know he will.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to get the scoop.
And then Shirley, after that, they go on a blacklist with the U.S. Embassy.
Well, send it to me and I'll post it, Alan. We'll keep you out of it. Say, look what I found. You know, just put it under my name. I'm already on their list anyway. So if the FBI KGB wants to call in, you know, feel free, guys, 215-383-3832. Just take a number like everybody else does and, you know, don't knock on my door and show up with, you know, your SWAT team. Just, you know, just call me. It's much easier. All right. Anyway, Alan, why don't you give your, before we get too far, let's get your information, Alan, and then we'll get on to Shirley. And I think your guest is a bit late, so we'll figure out what's going on with that. But, Alan, your tour guide information, sir, and then and you're welcome to stick around as long as you want or as long as you can, and then we'll kind of talk guns and competitions and rights here. Yeah. Go ahead, Alan.
All right. So I will not stick around for too much longer, but thank you so much. You guys have a great day. This is Alan Dawson from Belize in Central America for Action Radio.
He's got the tag. He's a pro. This is so good. All right, Alan, I'll talk to you next week. Thank you. Oh, boy. Shirley, I don't know if you had a chance to listen, but yesterday we had the most amazing exchange with Jen Clark in Australia, the day before she took her truck convoy. I don't know exactly her position, but I know she's one of the leaders of this Freedom Convoy movement in Australia. And so Action Radio is growing international. And so there's so many really incredible things happening. If DC Project has any connections internationally as well, you know, feel free, bring them on the show or invite them to call in on Skype. The Skype line works. I just had Alan on Skype. We had Jen on Skype. I've had my friend Anthony Williams from New Zealand on Skype. You know, so it works. And we're going to do multiple Skype lines one day. We're going to have, you know, Israel, New Zealand, Australia, and Canada all on the line at the same time. It's going to be pretty exciting around here. But guns, we talked about guns yesterday because...
Oh, you did? I did not listen to the show yet.
Okay, well, that's why it's podcasts. Yeah, I know you're busy. You know, everybody's busy, and I understand. But the first 2 hours were amazing. The last hour was pretty good, too, but the real key is Jen was new. She's in our group now, too, if you ever want to chat with her. But she made the statement, you know, they never saw this coming. They didn't know that the government was going to clamp down with these big mandates. You know, how could this happen? And I said, well, you know what? Those of us who are gun owners in the United States, we saw something. As soon as you clamp down on guns, and this is like a couple of years ago or whenever they did it, I said, the minute the guns were taken, we knew everything else could be taken. I mean, our heart sank. I compared it to, like, you know, the blowing up of Alderaan in Star Wars. You know, a big disturbance in the force, right? And that's kind of joking about it, but the thing was that we knew any government that can take the guns can take everything else, and that's exactly what's happened. And now they're trying to catch up from a further deficit in freedom. We're sort of pretty much at a deficit now too, because we have an illegal occupation in Washington, which puts a whole different situation. At least these governments, she said also they have election fraud too, so we don't even know if they have a legitimate government. But the guns are the warning. You know, and you and I have said this for years and years and years, and people don't believe it. They say, oh, yeah, no, you don't need, what do you need a gun for? You know, but it's the symbol. It's the greatest symbol of freedom that we have is the ability to be armed, you know, equal or better to your government. And that's what keeps them ultimately in check. Yeah, go ahead.
We keep the government. That's what the Second Amendment is about, keeping the government in check. And that's one of the things when Jeanette gets on, we're going to talk about that. What started happening in New Zealand before they started doing their rifle confiscation? You know, what because we need to be aware of that, and everybody needs to understand that, that when things start happening like that, we need to start standing up for our rights and letting our voice be heard. DC Project is doing some amazing stuff, speaking in front of state legislation from Missouri, Arizona, Michigan. I'm going to touch base on some of that later on. Are you going to?
Okay.
You said Jeanette's not on yet, or she is?
Well, my question is, sometimes we're Central Time here, and sometimes folks, what time zone is she in?
Central.
Because if you told, okay, so if you told her 7:30, she's going to call in an hour, and we need her now.
No,
so she knows the right time.
We pretty much discussed it. I believe I explained that properly.
Well, if you want to take a minute
to get
her in touch, get
I just
in touch with
I did.
Her.
All right, text her.
Okay, good.
While
you have a chance, let's get the DC report.
Yeah, that's right. I might have messed that all up.
I might have said seven.
Well, I did text her. Let me try. That might have messed up.
While you're doing that, let me play my PSA for folks to not take the COVID vaccine. So let me just play this. I'll give you a minute to this is why I have all these good things I can play here, which works out very well. I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. You've all heard those ads for people who have suffered medical or health tragedies, which say you may be entitled to compensation. But if you have suffered injuries or crippling diseases or medical procedures that went horribly wrong, it's not the compensation you need, it's the knowledge you should have had before the condition you suffer from now. So that you are never in that position in the future, I strongly recommend that you do not get any COVID vaccines. Get informed. Do your own research. For 99.97% of Americans, your natural immunity will give you, at worst, only moderate symptoms of COVID. If you've already had COVID, it's virtually impossible to get it again. There are effective cures for COVID, which will get you completely over the virus. There is no cure for the COVID-19 vaccines. Once you start down the road of DNA modification, there is no going back. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Dangerously cool. Okay, we're back, and we'll see if Shirley's still texting back and forth and what the situation is. Or I can talk about any number of things. I got a bunch of articles here. It's kind of a crazy day.
No, I did text her. I haven't heard back from her. I don't know. Maybe I messed up the time. You know how I am about that still. I'm still trying
to
get the central.
Hey, listen,
so
be the first. Yeah, we had a crazy situation. Kurt Schilling, you know, Hall of Fame baseball player, was on the show, and he was actually live in the studio, and he got it messed up. he had his Breitbart show to do, so he was like, he'd do my show, then he'd run the next room and call in his show, and then he'd run back and do my show. It was hysterical, but it's Central Time Zone, yeah. So tell me what you got, and then we'll see. If she can't join us, we still have the hour. There's plenty that we can talk about, and we'll just schedule
right.
another time. Go ahead.
So as part of being a DC Project, a nationwide group of women fighting to keep our Second Amendment. Just to let you know what we've been doing, what the ladies have been doing around the country. In Michigan, our state director, she testified before the Michigan House on a couple of bills. And the bills would disallow emergency orders that prohibit the Second Amendment rights. And
you're talking red flag laws or what kind of emergency orders are we talking about?
No, like when you were in emergency orders and you're not allowed to be concealed carry, you're not allowed to carry.
Were they doing that in Michigan? Were there COVID carry restrictions?
The bills, here's what the bills that she testified regarding. The bills would disallow emergency orders that prohibit the Second Amendment rights of residents.
Right.
So there's bills coming up that they want to disallow them, prohibit them from carrying if there's emergency orders intact.
Well, there'll always be an emergency. That's the first thing the government will do is declare an emergency so they stop the gun owners. I mean, we know how this works.
Exactly. They've kind of did that in other places, if I remember correctly.
Katrina.
Missouri.
Yeah. Oh, tell me about Missouri. I'm not familiar with Missouri.
Missouri. She testified online regarding a bill that would expand who schools may appoint as protection officers. Currently, only teachers and administrators are eligible. So they would expand as to who could carry in the schools. Also, she's a real go-getter, I must tell you. This is Susan Mayers.
Well, you know I want to show now.
Well, I'm sure I can probably make that happen. She did an in-person testimony in Jefferson City, Missouri, on two pieces of pro-2A legislation, both aimed at ridding the state of some gun-free zones. Gun-free, where are criminals going to hit? Where do they usually hit? Gun-free zones, right?
Yeah.
So,
is that called victim disarmament zones? Yeah.
Yeah. And she's calling, and they called it here vulnerable victim zones.
Yeah, same idea. Yeah, it's interesting. When we were talking to Jen in Australia about the gun situation there, she said, well, we don't have the mass shootings that you have in the United States. We don't have that. And I'm thinking, you know, I didn't really want to get into it. You know, the whole idea that those are the actions of criminals, and you don't steal guns from the law-abiding people to stop criminals. You stop criminals by stopping criminals. You know, and this is what the gun control group is so good at, is blurring the distinction between gun owners and criminals and making it all the same. It's the gun that's the problem. This is why they talk about gun violence. The whole reason for talking about gun violence is that it blurs the distinction. It makes law-abiding people on the same level as criminals. And this is why it's so important in every absolute debate that you have with anybody, you know, testifying, writing, whatever you do with this, you make it very clear that it's not gun violence, it's criminal violence. And that, you know, you have to make a distinction. You can't stop, you know, crime by disarming gun owners any more than you can stop bank robberies by, you know, stealing the money from the depositors. It's just not going to work that way. And you put it on that level, people go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. You know, you can't stop drunk drivers by taking all the cars from the sober people. It doesn't work. You know, and this is so, and the Second Amendment doesn't apply to criminals. It's a law-abiding person's thing. You know, it doesn't say the right of criminals, you know, and then criminals can be regulated. Criminals can be prosecuted. Criminals can be put in jail for their actions. There are legal and illegal uses of firearms. The Second Amendment doesn't cover use at all. And the reason it doesn't cover use is because there are legal and illegal uses. You have to leave that power to government to actually do the right thing, especially state and local governments. You know, but as long as you can make that distinction all the time, that the Second Amendment doesn't cover use. Use is legal or illegal. You're not going to stop the illegal use by getting rid of the legal guns. It doesn't work that way. So you almost always, and I do this all the time, I always make the distinction between criminal and lawful. Otherwise, they're blurring it. Does that make sense? What do you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. Okay. They're always thinking that if they add more laws, for some reason, these criminals will say, oh, that's a law. I can't do that. Well, that doesn't work that way. They're going to break the law. They're going to break the law no matter what, no matter how many laws you instill. And also, talking along those lines, just skipped my mind, whatever it was that was going to come up. Oh, so I was going to ask you, so you said Jen said they don't have mass killings in Australia?
Well, they had the Port Arthur one. That's the one that she talked about. She called it a false flag, but I think they have a different definition. False flag to me is something that's totally staged. That didn't actually happen. Her definition of false flag was more that it was used falsely, and so we have a difference in language. And there's a couple of other things that she talked about. She talked about a republic you know, being the place where you have a tyranny because there's no democracy. And it's like, well, we have a totally different definition of republic then, you know. And they talk about in the Australian – yeah, it's interesting. Now, the Australian Constitution, they talk about the people being supreme over the government. I said, well, in our country, God is supreme over the government. You know, God gives us our rights. God, you know, we are a country based on the fact that our birthright is superior to any government, that governments cannot can neither grant rights nor take them away. This is not their property in the first place. You know, and so there's some really different. So when I work with them to write, we're hopefully going to write an Australian Bill of Rights. It's going to be very interesting that their definition of republic and their place, you know, as one nation under God doesn't exist because they're not. And so we're going to have some really, this is going to be fascinating for me to go over different constitutions, you know, different laws, different perspectives on everything, even amongst our English speaking world, you know, countries. It's a whole different world out there, and it's going to be fascinating. That's why I'm looking for any international connections. If you have a comment on that, then I want to get back to Michigan and Susan, because we sort of skipped over some stuff. I want to kind of chat about a bit more. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
We can go back to Michigan.
Well, because we're talking about these emergency laws, and we kind of skipped to Missouri right away. And I was thinking it was going to be another case where there were laws that were sort of skipped over. I'm thinking Katrina was the worst case. You know, Democrat-controlled Louisiana, where I think it's a Republican state, but it was a Democrat mayor in New Orleans. I mean, they seized guns. They just took all the guns away. Said, you can't do that. Well, it's an emergency. You can't do that. There's no emergency in the world that takes away your constitutional rights. I don't care whether it's a pandemic, you know, locusts, a plague, you know, a nuclear war, you know, EMP explosion. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, hurricane devastation, floods, you always have your constitutional rights. Because the reason you do is because if rights can be taken in an emergency, they can be taken anytime by simply declaring an emergency. So this is backdoor, you know, gun confiscation. That's what it really is. If not denying the actual gun, denying the use of it. And what do you mean you can't carry a gun in an emergency? What? It's because someone has the flu. That's going to stop me from carrying a gun. You know, well, I'm curious what the arguments were. Did you hear some of the arguments Susan used? Yeah.
So usually when you think of an emergency is when you most need to be able to carry, because something has gone down and you need to be able to defend yourself, because normal first responders will not be able to get to you. In mm-hmm. my mind, when you're talking about an emergency situation like Katrina or some kind of a weather-induced emergency. So if these people can't get to you, your first responders can't get to you. And the old saying, you know, well, we need them right away. They're going to be minutes away. So you need to be able to defend yourself if that case would come about. So it's just kind of the opposite. When you're in situations like that, in emergency situations, you would need to be able to have your firearm with you.
How did that testimony go over? Do you have any... I don't know, any results or any sense of what happened up there? And who was opposing? Who was in favor of these emergencies? Obviously, the government was. I'm just curious, were there any groups there? Were there other people that were speaking on behalf of denying, you know, canceling the Second Amendment because of an emergency? Of course, canceling the Second Amendment is an emergency, quite honestly, because you can't do it.
Yeah.
But
do you know
how it went up there?
What's that?
Well, that's okay.
I don't know. Specifics about it. These are just like little recaps that we get. I mean, if we took specifics about every time one of our delegates was out there, or one of our state directors was out there testifying, it'd be quite a book we'd be putting together, because they are pretty busy out there. But I'll check to see if we can get her on the air here. And I still haven't heard from Jeanette, so I don't know what happened to her.
Oh, that's okay.
All right.
You know, like I say, if you need to check Facebook or check message sources or any of the many means of things we have here, texting, feel free. You know, I can always play something, or I can talk for a little bit, because I got a bunch of issues. Like I said, let's just reschedule her. You know, she's welcome anytime. I wanted to talk to her because of what's going on in New Zealand. And so New Zealand, I think, took the gun even before Australia did. So she comes – we'll get a little background here. I'm just curious. So she competes in the United States – but she's from New Zealand, but she can't own a gun in New Zealand. How does that work?
Well, I don't know all the laws that they've put on New Zealand right now. I knew they did the confiscation of rifles. There was that came along, but I think pistols are still allowed to have. But okay. Yeah, she was in the international. She had 1996. She was a top woman IPSC shooter in New Zealand, and
wow.
was in the top 10 shooters for the country. Let's see. I also looked up, because I think they're trying to also take some more firearms away from them.
Mm-hmm.
I saw something about that as well. I was going to talk to her about. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see what she has to say when we do get her on the air.
No, that's fine. Oh, that's fine. Yeah. I'm just wondering if, because I'm speculating here, because I sort of have my mind oriented to like a New Zealand conversation. But the crime statistics, you know, and have they, you know, I imagine crime has gone up, especially break-ins. You know, the first thing that happened in England when they took their guns was that criminals felt perfectly safe breaking into homes when people were there. You know, whereas, you know, usually in the United States, except in liberal Democrat areas where people, you know, can't have guns, criminals generally don't want to go if you're there because there's a good chance they're going to get shot in many places in the country and in many places where they know they won't get shot. You know, so it's okay to break in when the people are there because they're going to be so scared they're not going to do anything. And so home invasions usually increase and violence increases in areas where people can't protect themselves.
Well, that's true. And lots of times those issues aren't even covered or those statistics aren't even released. Because they don't want everybody to know that their great ideas aren't working, that criminals aren't obeying laws. And when
mm-hmm.
you take away just the tool, firearm is a tool just like anything else. When you
mm-hmm.
take that away, doesn't mean the criminals are going to say, oh, I can't use that. They're going to say, oh, wow, that's someone that's not able to protect themselves, just like the gun-free zones. Gun-free zones are a big issue because if you look at the mass killings and where they're at, they usually take place at gun-free zones. And did you also know that mass, what's considered a mass shooting or mass
mm-hmm.
killing
right.
is by the number of people that die? And that number was changed by, I think it was Obama, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think
it was
like four.
It went from,
or something. What is it?
I think it went to three. It was
three.
Four, and I think
three,
it went
right.
to three. I
yep.
think he changed it to three.
Yeah,
but
so
yeah,
mass killing to me is a lot of people. I mean, obviously it's a tragedy, you know, but we start changing our words. You know, genocide has been you know, greatly reduced. People use words, they'll use psychological terms like gaslighting just for someone to disagree with, as opposed to an actual, you know, mental campaign to drive somebody insane. So we lose the quality of our words. We lose the quality of debate when we start dumbing these things down. Clinton changed the unemployment measurement, so it looked a lot better. In fact, I got a report here that Brandon, completely, you know, his insurrection completely made up the jobs report for January. You know, they're screwing around with the numbers so much to make things look better, but we know the truth. You know, I knew during Obama's administration that the job rate was actually up around 20%. It was close to depression level. But because he changed the numbers, because Clinton changed the numbers, it was like 6%. It wasn't reflecting accurately. You know, and to say, and like I say, if I had more time, well, I'll talk to her at a separate occasion on that. But people need to understand that this is not, you know, I mean, you want to go to a violent country? Go to Yemen. You know, go to Mexican border, the cartels. You want to see violence? Talk to Josie. You know, when she calls in on Tuesday, she'll tell you about violence. She's from Nicaragua. You know, students were killed just for their beliefs. You know, so if you want to talk about real violence, we're you know, we may get there, you know, God forbid, you know, I hope not, but I'm just saying this, the way things are going, we need to turn this around. And I see the truckers and people resisting, you know, the snake oil jabs and all the other things. Hey, guess who just popped up on my board? She's here.
Hey, I did give her the wrong time.
Yeah, I thought so. Look, don't worry, you're not the first. So
won't be the
I think
last,
I was the
I'm
first.
Sure.
You won't be the last. It just happens that way. But yeah, let's let me get a little round of applause here for our guest. So Jeanette Sharp, welcome to Action Radio. We're right in the middle of a whole numbers distortion, you know, conversation. So feel free to just leap right in or just say hi, and we'll get you all caught up. How you doing?
It's great. Thanks, you.
I'm having so much fun. I can't stand it. Yeah.
Hey, you doing?
I gave you the wrong time, I guess.
Sorry. You said 7 o'clock my time, but that's okay. That's okay. Yeah, this number distortion thing, it's worldwide, completely worldwide as well. I mean, New Zealand's exactly the same. They're basically telling people what they want them to know, and unless you know how to get in there and work it out for yourself, you're just bumbling along thinking everybody's doing such a great job. It's scary.
Yeah, they make our numbers look worse and other people's numbers look better. Yeah. Hey, Cheryl, I tell you what, I'm going to kind of back off here for a little bit because this is your guest, and I'll let you guys chat, and I'll have you know, questions that Jeanette can't answer in a little bit. So that's usually what I end up doing anyway. So, Shirley, feel free.
She's an awesome lady. I'll just tell you, a little, I just want to talk a little bit about Jeanette because she was one of the first people I met at my first three gun camp in Louisiana. And she's an amazing woman. She's like a jack of all trades. If you ever see her on the range at any type of a match, working a match, she is everywhere doing everything at the speed of light. And just to give you a little background about Jeanette, and you can talk about this as we go along. She started shooting when she was a teenager with a 22, and then progressed along to 1996. She was a top woman IPSC shooter in New Zealand, and also in the top 10 shooters for the country.
Wow, and congratulations.
She's amazing. Some of this stuff I didn't even know about her, and I've known her for years now. I know, it's pretty interesting. She sent me the bio and went, wow,
yeah.
Amazing.
We got a celebrity. This
is
great.
No, you haven't.
She splits her and her husband, Earl, split their time between New Zealand and Shreveport, Louisiana. They spend 7 or 8 months here.
Wow.
I don't want to put words in her mouth, but she seems to love this country, and I'll let her expand upon that as well. So like I said, she's also done a lot of work in different matches. So
wow.
I just want to start out because...
Yeah, let's hear your story. Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, because, we're talking about women and guns. I want to hear about her first time shooting, what it was like if she remembers.
You're fading in and out. You want to hear what?
Like, I'm fading in and out?
Yeah.
No, I think you both tried to talk at the same time.
It could be me.
No, I think we're all trying to talk at the same time. It gets kind of crazy around here sometimes. But so, Shirley, you go, and then we'll get Jeanette. So, Shirley, what do you want to know, and then Jeanette?
Just tell me how you got started in firearm shooting.
My first husband took me to what we call small bore, and I've never actually seen it here, but you shoot 22 rifles prone inside or under hallways, under floors and things like that, target shooting basically.
Wow.
It's like watching paint dry, honestly. It really is. It's, and the people that we shot with, you just didn't crack a smile, you didn't laugh, you didn't joke. And I actually struggled with that. I got kicked out of the hall several times for actually enjoying myself. So that was not for me.
Are you going to feel right at home at Action Radio then? You're in the right place. We always make fun of everything. We don't care.
You have to, or you sit in a corner and cry.
Yeah.
Then he decided, well, a friend of his actually started pistol shooting, and we thought, oh, yeah, we're okay. And my then-husband went, and he went along, and he got the bug, and he decided that I should come along too. And I'm thinking, no, I don't really want to do this. This is not me. I've just got enough to do. And on first attempt, they handed me a 357 Magnum, at 10 yards and told me to hit a target. So I was the, and needless to say, I didn't. And I ended up getting very frustrated and deciding that I needed some instruction. And I progressed down to a 45, which was still far too big for me, but I loved it. And eventually went into an open 9mm and took off at a great rate of knots and found that, because I was a runner back in high school, that my legs did a lot of the work for me, and as long as I could be accurate, it was a great sport, and the people will actually let you enjoy yourself and have a good laugh, and, sort of slotted in quite nicely there.
I want to just hold it here for a second. This is – go ahead, Shirley, then I have a question. This is some really valuable information here. All right. You're talking calibers, and for people, we got a lot of folks listening around the world that have, most of our listeners are still in the United States, but I mean, we do have people that will never be able to own a gun. And so lot of times when we talk about guns, I like to sort of, you know, get the idea of what a caliber is. So a .357 Magnum, especially in a smaller revolver, is a pain in the butt to shoot. It's loud. The flame is huge. And unless you need a decent enough gun, I don't shoot a .357 in less than a 6-inch barrel, you know, Ruger GP100 or a Smith & Wesson 686, both of which I own. And they're wonderful for a .357 Magnum because it's a big-ass heavy gun. And so it absorbs mm-hmm. the recoil, and most of the noise goes forward. I also shoot with both foam earplugs and a headset. The noise from a .357 is deafening. So unless you have proper hearing protection, you're going to flinch. You're never going to hit a target with a .357 Magnum, especially in a shorter barrel. Even a 4-inch barrel is too short, I think, for a full .357. You're better off in a lesser caliber of the same size, like the .38 Special. And you can compete very successfully with a .357 handgun, revolver with 38 special rounds. You don't flinch, you don't have the recoil, you don't have as much noise, you still need the hearing protection, you know, but it's manageable. And people think bigger bullets are better. Well, yeah, for self-defense if you can handle them, but if they're not, you know, you shoot a 350. I don't know anybody that competes with a 357 simply because it's, you know, you can stop a deer and large animals, you know, with a 357 Magnum.
Elephants, yeah.
Yeah, yep. Well, I wouldn't, you know, since I want something a little bigger, but I can't imagine ever wanting to kill, you know, I don't, you know, the hunting thing is a whole different before, but the thing is the powerful gun. 45, I love 45s, but I also have the hands of a lumberjack. Okay, I'm 6'1".
Yeah.
You know, I've got big ass hands. That's why I had to change guitars because the Gibson necks are too small. I have to play Strats. You know, just a little sideline there. But I got big ass hands. Mm-hmm. Okay, my hand, the web of my hand is huge. I can hold a 45 in one hand and shoot. Okay, but if I were smaller, you know, or lighter, or didn't have the hand size it did, 9mm would be perfect. So 9mm is like the best all around, I think, caliber. It's a great caliber for women. It's a great caliber for guys. I'm going to shoot the hell out of my Beretta 92, the one that's modeled after the military this year. I want to really, you know, shoot. I haven't shot much 9mm. I'm more of a 40 kind of guy, 40, 45. But finding a caliber that you're happy with makes all the difference in the world. It is such an incredible. Well, tell me your story. 357 to 45 to 9. You really like 9mm, right? I mean, I can just tell by what you're talking about.
So easy to shoot after the other two. I mean, these are the same guys that put me prone down behind a 50 Barrett on a concrete pad. So they were really enjoying the day. Me, not so much. So, some of them stayed friends, some of them not. Anyway... I actually shoot in New Zealand. I shoot a 38 Super, which is the long 9mm stoked up.
Okay.
So I'm mm-hmm. shooting major in a 38 Super, which I really love because you get the speed, you get the very little recoil because it's comped, it's dotted, it's basically, it's an open gun. So everything you're allowed on it, I've got it, and it makes it so easy. Whereas mm-hmm. so many women over here shoot production guns with just open sights, no compensator, and more power to them because my eyes won't let me shoot anything like that anymore. And I'm getting older, so I have hardly shot at all this year. In fact, I don't think I've shot at all. I don't even think I've sent around downrange.
Are there a lot of competitions in New Zealand?
No, like over here you have your regionals and you have your sectionals and you have your local matches every weekend. We'll have a club match every weekend, but it's the same guys every weekend. So you're not really getting any training. Well, you're getting training, but you're not getting pushed every weekend. Like we would go out to the club every weekend and there would just be Errol and I, first and second, second and first, and swapping around all the time. And these same guys coming out and getting grumpy I'd walk onto the range sometimes and some of the guys would leave because they would get it handed to them on a plate and they didn't like it. And like over here, the guys are so, majority of the guys, most of the guys that I've met here are happy to see women on the range. It was really hard. We're talking 25, 30 years ago for me to go out there being sometimes the only woman at a match. I had one guy tell me that he didn't sign up to come to a match to spend a weekend with a woman on the range. So why are you here?
Oh my.
Yeah, so that kind of makes you think, okay, we'll tick you off next match. We'll just
so has it changed
next
much?
Match. A little. Yeah, a little. Women, there's a lot more women shooting over there now. Still nothing to what the turnout for women here is. Like, I was shocked the first match, that first babes match I helped out with, the quantity and quality of the women shooters was amazing to me. Even though I knew, like, I'd already met Kay and I'd already seen them shoot, I knew they were special. But there wasn't that big drop. Like, in New Zealand, there was me up here, master grade, and then the next woman was like a low C grade. So there was really never any competition for a lady, or for me, in the ladies' competition. It was always me trying to beat the guys coming through, which was good because there was always somebody that would annoy me at a match that I'd try and pick off the next time. So I always
they made
had
you
that.
Better. They made you better.
I always had that need to kill somebody.
That's funny. All right, go ahead, Shirley. Yeah.
Yeah, like Greg said, a lot of people aren't in the shooting industry or environment. So you mentioned a couple of names. You mentioned Kay, and you're talking about the Mitch Licks. And then for those of you who don't know, and I'm going to let Jeanette put it in her own words. For me, I heard them defined as the first family of shooters because they are just amazing. From Jerry to Kay to Lena, their daughter. Jerry and Kay are husband and wife, and they are just amazing in the firearms industry. Jerry's, they've won so many different awards. So how would you define them as a family in this shooting environment? And how did you get to meet them? Because they are just, they live in Louisiana, and first time I met them, I thought, oh, they're just so down to earth and awesome people.
Well, that's just it. They are. I mean, I'm sitting here looking out the window and Jerry's wandering around looking bored already, and it's only, 20 past 7 in the morning. He needs to get out there and shoot something. You would never know. I mean, even walking into their house, there's a few trophies around, but unless you know, like down in Kay's shop, she's finally set out all the world championship trophies and things, so people going down to Kay's classroom can actually see them now. To meet them, you wouldn't know that Jerry's got something like 35 world titles and Kay's got 7, and I think Lena's up to 7 now too. And Lena's 27 next month, so she's got her whole life ahead of her to equal, if not better, her father. And the way she trains, I don't think it'll be long and she'll be, like when I met Kay, it was Jerry who. I didn't know who Jerry was because I'd only followed open shooters. And Jerry, of course, back then was the maestro of revolver. And I had no interest in revolver, so I didn't even have a clue who he was, which was my bad. But, very humble, very open. They're just normal. Whereas some of the shooters I've met over here, master grade or grandmaster, some of them aren't that humble. Some of them are, we'll just leave that there. they've been reading their own press, I think.
So do you hunt?
I do. I didn't last year because I started my new job at Home Depot mixing paint. But back in New Zealand,
at least you're mixing
rabbit,
it, Jeanette. At least you're mixing it. You're not watching it dry.
No, I've progressed. It's like graduation. Back in New Zealand, I hunted pests because I was off a farm. So you're always shooting rabbits or goats. Or I never actually progressed to deer because I could never. I'm not that confident in my long-range ability, so I don't want to go out there and shoot something and then have to spend the next 6, 8, 10 hours tracking it to make sure it's dead. I want to, like, rabbits and goats, not a problem, but, the big stuff, not so. And a couple of years ago, we went up to Wyoming with Jerry and Kay, and we shot prairie dogs, and that's my new love affair. That is awesome. It's just like Mexican trains. I didn't realize they were cannibals. They eat themselves.
It's prairie dogs?
They do.
You
I
shoot
didn't
one.
That.
I didn't know that.
Prairie dogs, yeah. Yeah, prairie dogs. You shoot one, and, of course, there's blood and guts everywhere. And then his cousin Fred will pop out of the next hole and think, oh, so he'll pop out and he'll start chewing on him, the first one. So you shoot her, the next one, and there's blood and guts off him, so there's another one pop up. It's just like providing food for the hungry. It's just like Mexican trains.
Where did you do that at?
Wyoming.
Oh, okay.
Near Wyoming, Montana, up through there. It's such a problem. There's so many holes in the ground. You drive down the road and it looks like there's been a bomb through the place. It's just horrendous.
Wow. Yeah, I was wondering how you could have the ability to, you know, they're not like a game animal. So they had to be, you know, in the pest, the vermin category,
yeah,
to be able to,
yeah,
to hear that. Interesting. So you talk about Jerry, I think it's Jerry Mitchell, like you were talking about, the world speed record revolver shooter.
Yes.
I don't know if you mentioned his last name, just to make sure we got that out there. Yeah. Oh, of course, now I want him on the show. Shirley, add this to your list, please. Let's get Jerry on. You know, guests lead to guests. That's just how we do things here.
I do.
Do you have,
yes,
more questions, Shirley? Because I got a question from Jeanette. If, you know, I don't know how many questions you have. I mean, feel free to go ahead.
Yeah.
But,
you go ahead. I mean, next thing I'm going to be wanting to talk to you about is the gun confiscation in New Zealand. But go ahead.
Oh, yeah, we'll definitely get into that.
And we'll go to...
But I was thinking, you know, I sort of hesitate to talk about, you know, women and guns because I don't want to make a distinction. I really like to talk about people and guns as much as possible. But that is a reality. That's what's going on in the world today. And as someone that taught a lot of women students how to fly, you know, disproportionate to the amount of women that were flying, it was really interesting to see differences, mm-hmm, between women and guys, you know, in their approach to learning how to fly and shooting. I think it would be, it seems like a very, very much of a natural sport for women. And I'm thinking lower center of gravity. You mentioned your legs, better balance a lot of times, good hand-eye coordination. Once you take the strength aspect out of it, you know, you take the 357 Magnum, and that was probably given to you so you,
yep,
would fail. I mean, I have a feeling that there was some,
yes,
some sinister, you know, behind the scenes thought that, well, let's make her fail. Let's give her the 357, you know, which was stupid. I would have started with the 9 or the 38. Because I start everybody, you know, mm-hmm, guys, you know, I start everybody with a, you know, if I'm teaching, you know, someone to shoot who's never shot before, I'm not going to give them a 357 Magnum. They're going to run away.
Nice.
You know, women I see as this is a natural sport that women could really excel in simply because of, you know, hand-eye coordination, balance, a lower center of gravity, and the ability to listen, you know, and learn fast. That's just how it strikes me. So the more women that start shooting, the better, as far as I'm concerned. I'm you know, because women shooters are women voters. You know, our gun voters, you,
mm-hmm,
know, our freedom,
exactly,
and rights,
right,
people. And you take, women traditionally have voted in this country more for Democrats and for socialists and for more government. And women who take up shooting become much more independent and much more likely to guard my rights at the poll. You know,
yeah,
being independent, saying, I don't want my guns taken away. I don't want my rights taken away. So not only are you introducing women to the sport of shooting, you're increasing the pool of people nationally that are going to vote for freedom over socialism. So you can't lose.
Yep.
You know, having more and more women,
no,
shoot, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, yeah. Jeanette, what do you think?
It's brilliant. The women that are shooting here, and they're so encouraging. You'll get women here specifically. Like I instructed for the Babes franchise for a few years, and
mm-hmm,
we were getting a lot of older women that all they wanted to do was have a gun to protect themselves,
mm,
which is something you cannot do in New Zealand. You cannot protect yourself with anything larger than what the perpetrator is using against you.
What?
So
how would you know?
Yeah, exactly. You basically have to wait till they hit you and then take a good look at what they hit you with and then think, oh, I can't use that knife out of that drawer. I'll have to use that butter knife in the other drawer. Yeah, there's no ability to be able to protect yourself in New Zealand whatsoever, which is, I think if they ever did bring that in into New Zealand, there would be a heck of a lot more women shooters around. But because that option is not available, it's not... it is frowned upon over there to even talk about protecting yourself with a firearm.
Wow.
So
well, we need.
That,
go ahead, Shirley. Yeah, this is a good time for
are
you.
Are you saying,
yeah,
that if someone's coming at me with a knife, like a man's coming at me with a knife, he's within a couple feet of me, and I draw and I shoot him, I'm illegally done that. I'm going to jail.
Yes, because you wouldn't be allowed to have a firearm on you to protect yourself.
Wow.
Like even Errol is an electrician, or was before he retired. He carries a Leatherman everywhere he goes. Depending on...
What's that?
who you took, a multi-tool.
A Leatherman.
Yeah, multi-tool. Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's the accent again.
Yeah, we need an interpreter, don't we?
Well, we had Alan from Belize on right before you. So, yeah, man, we were talking like this from Belize, and we're having a great time. Now it's like, hi, New Zealand. Okay. How you doing, Jeanette? Nice to hear from you. Sorry. Go ahead.
You're fine.
Thank you.
If like in New Zealand, you're not even supposed to carry a knife for protection.
Wow.
So the only reason Errol carries the Leatherman, well, the fact that he's a gadget man and it's got all the tools on it he needs, it's also got a blade on it that he can use if he needs to. But, yeah, you're not – there's no provision to protect yourself in New Zealand that way.
Would you like to change that, he said with a grin.
Oh, hell yes.
Okay. Do you know what we do here?
I'm not saying that we don't, but you certainly wouldn't carry, or we don't carry in New Zealand. We definitely carry here, but we do not carry in New Zealand.
Yeah, if you have a carry permit, if you want to tell me, I'd be curious. I have a carry permit in Florida. You know, I carry most of the time.
I carry all the time. Yep.
Well, there you go. So that's even better. Shirley, would you like to explain our citizen legislature, or shall I really quickly, then you can get on to New Zealand?
You can go ahead.
Okay. We are the first show in the world that actually has a working citizen legislature. I created this for the sole purpose of allowing regular people to write the laws that they consent to be governed by, which means we have a website, writeyourlaw.com. We'll talk about this more after, and Shirley and I, we can do this. But if you go to writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws, you will see an entire citizen legislature. We're going to create a New Zealand section. I've already got my webmaster doing Australia and Canada and Israel as well, because those are the folks I'm in contact with. But if you want to write a bill, that gives that says the government can't touch, you know, firearms rights, or go into the New Zealand law or the New Zealand constitution, and you write something, you can circulate this among all the gun owners and all the prospective gun owners, and you can say, we want this in the next election. You can make it an election issue. And when the government says, well, we can't do this, we don't know what to do, we have to study, you say, no, we've already done that. Here's the bill. This is what the law that we want. What are you going to do with it? That's what we do here. Interested?
Yeah.
Think about it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Shirley?
One other thing, because I know we're going to be running out of time here, that I would really like to talk about is, well, DC Project, which I talked about before, is Women for Gun Rights Supporting the Second Amendment. Mm-hmm. A couple questions. First, is there any type of organization like that in New Zealand? And then I want to talk about, is there any parallel, do you see any parallel between what happened in New Zealand before they started confiscating your ARs and it? I don't know if they're trying to do some more confiscation of more firearms, and what laws they're trying to pass in various states here in America.
Okay. Not anything as strong as the DC Project. There is what they call COLFO, C-O-L-F-O, Coalition of Licensed Firearms Owners, who went to bat for the firearms owners regarding the confiscation issues. They, of course, were on a hiding to nothing because the media had already been bought by the government and all black guns were evil and all people that owned them were evil. So this was the first strike of divisiveness that the current Prime Minister dealt to citizens of New Zealand. I noticed this morning the ATF have now admitted they have close to a billion digitised records here in the US. So basically they have a registry set up here that nobody knew about, which has been brought in under the current administration that you have here. Where did I write that? Yeah, a billion records, 94% of them are digitized, over 850 million transactions now at the ATF over the last 2 years. What they're trying to do in New Zealand is also bring in a registry. It was supposed to start from the 1st of January this year, and thankfully COVID has delayed that. New Zealand has a tiered system. You must have a firearms license before you can purchase a firearm legally in New Zealand. And that is your norm. It's all categorized. So you have an A category license, which allows you to have a 22 or a double barrel shotgun, long range rifle, any single shot rifle, that sort of basic level. A B category is your pistol license. You must be a member of a pistol club and have attended that club at least 12 times in a calendar month. to retain that license. Then you have a collector's license, which you can have anything under 4-inch barrel, so snub-nosed revolvers, things like that. Also submachine guns, but you're not allowed to fire them. Then you have your dealer's license.
Sorry.
Funny. Yeah, I know. You get to take them out and polish them, like Scrooge McDuck does with his dollar notes. Everything must be deactivated. Parts must be stored at another address, that sort of thing. Then you have dealers and what used to be the E-category license, which was your military-style semi-automatics, which is now defunct, which was the confiscation 2 years ago that has really started the rot in New Zealand between the ordinary licensed firearms owners and the police and the government. So there's a real distrust issue going on there with that. And, of course, registration, we all know, leads to confiscation. So with this registration coming in this year, there'll be very few people fully complying. Just as a heads up.
So you didn't have a registry?
The pistols, and the MSSAs were registered. They had to be. So they knew what MSSAs we have, and they knew what pistols we have, the MSSAs being the ARs. Just as an idea, it cost the country $103 million for 56,000 firearms when they confiscated them. COLFO, the Coalition of Licensed Firearms Owners, estimates there's still at least 170,000 MSSAs out there, illegal ones. I've got a friend that's been asked by the police 3 times for one of his rifles, and he's even got the receipt from the police to say he handed it in. This is the sort of ineptitude that you were dealing with. The B category, the pistols, it's only at best 80% correct 100% of the time. And Errol knows of an importer who imported M14 copies several years back. He went in after the registration and checked the numbers, and only 17% of what he himself imported had been handed in. So it didn't work. It cost them a lot of money, and it's made criminals out of a vast majority of the populace. And, of course, gun crime has skyrocketed because, oddly enough, the gangs never handed theirs in, and who would have guessed that would have happened? So,
gee, what a surprise.
You
I'm
know,
shocked. That's what I am, shocked.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah, absolutely. I've got a friend that's in the police. They had to go and knock on the gang headquarters door and say, look, I'm here to collect your guns. The gang member gave them the California wave and told them to go away, but not quite so politely. And, of course, they did. They had to be seen to be trying to get the guns back. Didn't work, so they've tried. It's failed. Doesn't matter.
So the gangs still have their guns, but the people that don't...
The honest people that have things to lose if they get caught. Yeah, correct.
Well, that's by design.
And like New Zealand.
This is how criminals are supposed to have guns, so they can terrorize the honest people, so the government can provide the illusion of safety by taking away the honest people's guns, because the criminals aren't going to overthrow the government, I would say overthrow, that's the wrong word, but the criminals aren't going to defend against an oppressive government because they still have their guns. It's the citizens that have to defend against an oppressive government. That's why it's always disarming of the citizens, of the law-abiding citizens that can join together in mass numbers like Canada and New Zealand and Australia is happening right now. That's what the government fears. Mm-hmm. They don't fear the criminals. The criminals are part of the government, if you want to look at it that way, that they are an adjunct part to create fear in the population so the government can give the illusion of safety by taking away the guns and saying, we'll protect you instead. That's how it works.
Well, the fact that the government's just forked out, I think, close to $3 million and paid one of the local gangs for a meth to basically help the gang members get over their meth addiction.
There you go.
For $3 million directly to a local gang just for the hell of it because it looks good. But, yeah, I did. Yeah. I'm just...
So is this kind of like we pay the gangs to, like, we're paying them to protect the, trying to get it to the point where you pay the gangs to protect the people?
Pretty much.
Yeah. Well, the good news was one of the gang members got shot, fatally shot, about 4 or 5 months ago. And they tested him, and of course he had COVID, so he got put down as a COVID death as well. So not only did we get rid of a gang member, we got an extra COVID death in there too. So that was sort of two for one.
How about that? Well, in the time we have, I just got to see this question quickly, and then I'll let Shirley do it. And we'll probably hold Derek for about 5 minutes, and we'll kick him over the next hour. I'm working with Jen Clark in Australia. She's in the Truckers Convoy. She was on for almost 2 hours yesterday. Do you know any folks in New Zealand that are working with the Truck Convoy or part of it, or especially organizers or coordinators, coordinators that you could connect me with so I can offer the same service I am to the Australian Convoy to show how citizen legislation works, to show how you guys can actually write laws and supply them directly to government and use that as a lobbying tool, an election tool, a campaign tool, advocacy for whatever you want to do it for. And I'm going to send you, I'll get your email later, but I want to send you the bills, specific bills that we have that relate to, you know, gun freedom, like tax credits and tax deductions for gun ownership, you know, so that low-income people can access quality firearms and ammunition. You know, so I've got, I'm going to turn this around like you wouldn't believe, but so my last question, can you connect me with anybody? You don't have to tell me names or anything right now, but can you connect me with folks in New Zealand in the Truckers Convoy of people that you know, or people that you know that know people? Yeah. Yes?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, good. Well, then we'll talk off the air. Shirley?
Okay.
See, I knew. See, she knows people.
She knows people. This is radio. This is how we save the world, folks. You know, people who know people. So Jeanette, we'll definitely be talking. So, I'll text you after the show. And, you know, if it says action radio, that's me. So don't everybody else do that.
All right. Okay.
All right. Anyway, last couple, we got Derek. So let's just go a couple more minutes, Shirley, and then we'll get Bray on Derek.
No, I want to thank Jeanette for being on the show. And I sorry about giving you the wrong time frame. I'll get this right one of these days. And she's an awesome, I think she's an awesome person. And I just love talking to her, and she's so insightful and learning so much about what's going on in New Zealand. Cause I remember back when I was in elementary school, I did a report on New Zealand, and I loved it. And it's a beautiful country, but it sounds like it has a few issues that we hope that we can avoid getting into here in America. But,
yes.
So
thanks
very
much for asking me
on the show.
Was great.
You can come back anytime.
It was really good.
Now that you've been on Action Radio, you've got our number. You can call anytime. You can join Shirley anytime.
Okay.
And, you know, it's up to you guys. But as far as I'm concerned, feel free to come back, especially, you know, if you have new insights or things that I can help. Well, like I said, we'll be talking off the air too, because there's a lot of things that we can do in terms of citizen legislation, which is a whole new concept to a lot of people, but it's catching on really fast. You know, so anyway.
Yeah.
Jeanette, thank you.
That'd be great.
You folks are both
welcome. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Now, you're both welcome to stick around if you can. If not, then I understand. Jeanette, do you have any contact information for any organization that you would like to offer at this time? Competitive shooters, things like that, Facebook pages? Yeah, go ahead.
No. I didn't have anything written down for that. Sorry.
That's okay. We'll get you next time.
Oh, yeah.
Shirley can put in our Action Radio Gun Group.
Little. Yeah. Put more research in that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shirley, your contact?
No. You can reach me at DC Project Florida State Director at gmail.com if you're interested in any information about DC Project or joining us in our fight to preserve the Second Amendment. And I would just like to be signing off as the DC Project Women and Guns section of Action Radio.
Ooh, the taglines are catching on. I think Alan started something. All right, let's get the money.
You did.
Again,
I love that. And I went, I'm going to copy that.
You do that too. I'm going to get everybody to do a tagline. Yeah, we'll start to – Alan just started – I'd forgotten about it because, you know, we're so professional around here. But let's talk money. We're going to change the subject a little bit. Again, Jeanette, Shirley, you're both welcome to stay as long as you can. But if you have to leave, that's why I get your contact information first. Just so, you know, there we go. All right, here we go. Money. What is it? How does it work? How do you get it to work for you? So many choices. Stocks, bonds, mutual funds, commodities, and then there are the markets. Oil, gold, manufacturing, trade, energy, even government. To make sense of all the places your money can go,
Derek Park of Edward Jones Financial Advisors joins us Fridays at this time to make sense of the markets and your money.
Yeah, I got to make a theme for Shirley, too. Well, everybody gets a theme. Once you've been here for a few weeks, I kind of go, now that I got a sense of this report, what can I do? So Derek Park does money, investments, all kinds of things. Let's bring him on. And you've got Jeanette Sharp, who is our guest from the previous hour, who is a New Zealand now, you know, firearm competitor here because you can't do it there. And so if you have New Zealand questions you've always wanted to ask Derek, now is the time. Good morning.
All right. Awesome. Hello. Good morning. How are you doing? Hi.
Good. How you doing?
It's a Friday.
I know. It's good.
Well,
all right.
Let's get to the bad news. What's the financial report? then we'll discuss individual things. And Jeanette, you're always welcome to ask Derek a question too. This is the fun of all the new people that come on the show. Derek, what do we got for the report? And then let's talk about it.
All right. Well, good morning. This is Derek Park with Edward Jones bringing you the daily financial market report. U.S. equities closed near lows of the day as a hot inflation reading of this morning sparked a sell-off across equity and bond markets. The technology-heavy NASDAQ fell more than 2%, while the S&P 500 was down over 1.5%. Yields climbed higher, with the U.S. 10-year climbing over 2% for the first time since the pandemic began. Volatility spiked higher as well, with the VIX volatility index up over 20% on the day to 24% levels. Next page. U.S.
page
equities
two.
Closed lower today.
We'll do
waiting
a Paul
for
Harvey.
You to do that.
And now, page two.
There you go.
Okay.
Dow closed down 526 points, or 1.47% to 35,242. NASDAQ closed down 305 points, or 2.1% to 14,186. And the S&P 500 closed down 83 points, or 1.8 to 4504. Again, in the bond market, Treasury yields were trading at 2.04%, higher by 0.11. In the commodity markets, the price of crude oil was up 17 cents, or 0.19% to $89.83, and the spot price of gold was down $9, or 0.47 to $1,828. This is Derek Park of Ever Jones, member SIPC. You can get me at 850-995-0082.
Well, we'll get inflation in just a minute, but the first thing I noticed, the oil price is down. Wasn't it over $90 last week? $90 a barrel?
It was. It was roughly 92, I think is what it was. So oil's kind of ticked down a little bit. I mean, everybody keeps expecting $100 oil, which means, probably going to be roughly almost $4 at the pump.
I'm not expecting it. I'm expecting Brandon to be decertified so that we can get rid of his ass. But that's another story, right? You know, and of course Derek can't comment on half the things that I say during his report, but that's okay. But yeah, the price of oil. Well, now that we have Jeanette here, let's do a little comparison. Now in New Zealand, most of the price of gas or petrol is taxed for your health plan, right? So what are you paying per liter?
They are currently paying around the $2.80 New Zealand a liter. So that works out. I think we worked it out to something like $7 a gallon, U.S. equivalent.
Yeah.
How much of that is tax?
So that's even worse than California.
Oh, yeah. Did you figure how much of that was tax? How much of the price of gasoline?
In New Zealand, it's around about the 50% mark, or a bit more, because they keep putting it up.
So you're paying at least $3.50, which is comparable. Go ahead, Derek.
Yeah, you have to keep in mind, Greg, too. You know, I mean, I'm, island nations typically are going to see higher costs. Like when I was in the Army and stationed out in Hawaii before oil kind of tipped off, I mean, they were paying, while the mainland USA was paying $3, it was $5 out there. You know,
yeah, but
mean?
You don't have as far to go.
Say again?
You don't have as far to go. You're on an island.
Oh, you don't have as far to go, but, you know, I mean, it's a pain in the keister to get oil out there, you know. So, I mean, I don't know if New Zealand maybe is experiencing the same thing, being a little bit detached, just an assumption. Obviously, I don't know. Maybe a good comparison is does she, Jeanette, do you know how the price is in Australia maybe?
No, not Australia, but we did have our own gas plant in New Zealand, and the current dictator closed that down. So that also dropped or increased the price there. She's also stopped coal mining in New Zealand, so now we have to import it all from Thailand because it's all this new Green Deal stuff that's going on that's hitting everybody else in the back pocket. But it looks good to everybody from the outside, but those that have to pay for it are paying through their net, through the butt, basically.
Almost as good as the give up your guns plan, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Well, that wasn't quite so funny. No. No, it wasn't.
Yeah. Well, that's why Jeanette was on the show. I don't know if you caught this, Derek, but Jeanette was here as she's a New Zealand citizen, competitive shooter here, and spends a lot of time in this country competing. So we talked about guns. That's her expertise. I don't know how many awards do you have, and she's like a nationally known competitor. Are you ranked in New Zealand or ranked in the United States or both, Jeanette? She knows guns.
I was ranked in New Zealand.
Yeah. Okay.
I was ranked in the top 10 in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Regularly for about 20 years. But that's gone now. I'm getting old and my eyes are failing.
Red dots. Put red dots on your guns.
I'm sure.
Red dots.
I'm sure you could probably still outshoot most of the people nowadays. So I wouldn't test it.
that's an issue near and dear to Jeanette's heart. Obviously, for the country, but just for being a world class competitive shooter. So if you have a question on that, Derek, she's the one to ask.
No, I was. I'm pretty well versed in it. I was being a little facetious. I know it was a sore subject for a lot of people, and I know it's caused crime rate to kind of shoot through the roof. I mean that there's been bad byproducts from it all. Well aware. Maybe a poor taste joke.
Yep.
I was trying to make a funny.
Well, I just like to say because sometimes I forget that people don't know what I know about the previous parts of the show because I'm actually here for all of it, all the time. So
right.
I'm kind of so then I forget. But what's interesting, just one more thing on Australia and the oil price. You've in New Zealand, you've got a lot of oil drilling. When I used to live in Melbourne, I mean, we could see the oil rigs. The strait, the Tasman Strait between Victoria and Tasmania is like a very oil-rich area. Do you get oil from Australia and New Zealand? And the reason I'm asking, I'll tell you why I'm asking this for Derek in a minute. You don't?
No. I'm not 100% sure where it comes from, but it certainly wouldn't come from Australia because I know they're importing as well. I'm actually just on the internet. I'm going to price of fuel in Victoria. I'm going to Google that while we're talking so that I can... Australia, so that we can just compare. But because there's 5 million people in New Zealand and there's 5 million people in Melbourne, it's $1.59 for fuel in New South Wales, Australia. So Australia is about 90 cents US.
Well, that's a litre, folks. That's not a gallon. That's a litre.
That's a litre.
Yeah,
a litre.
Yeah.
And there's about 2.5 litres per gallon. Give or take.
Yeah. See, the reason I'm asking is that so many countries that are going green, this is a question for you, Derek, so many countries going green are losing, like we're losing. We don't, the federal lands, you can't get extensions on your oil leases. You can't have new drilling. They've cut back on coal. This fantasy that you can be a petroleum, free environment. And this wacko theory of if you get rid of carbon dioxide, the world will be a wonderful place, but all the plants are going to die because that's what they breathe. The insanity of all this, you look at this in terms of who has oil and who doesn't. The countries that are giving up oil still have to import it. They have to import coal. So the prices are reflective of that. One of the best things any country could do would be self-sufficient in energy. Right?
Hey, wasn't there a country that had that?
Yeah, we did.
Not that far away from here.
Why don't you mention that?
Yeah.
I love having you on the show, Jeanette.
That's a fact. I mean, it's unfortunate. I believe that we should, be looking for other energy sources. I even saw an article here recently about cold fusion, and it's about to become a reality. Obviously I put kind of a negative comment because people will find a way to charge more for it, even though it can create perpetual free energy, the oil industry, for anybody to think that they're going to make an impact in it in the next 5 or 10 years, I think is unrealistic. We have so many things that rely on oil as of right now in a comparison to anything, any other source, you know, batteries, hydrogen, whatever you want to compare it to, or even natural gas, for that matter, which is, you know, a byproduct of
that's petroleum product. Yeah.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right. So, you know, the bottom line is it's for anybody to say in the next 10 years we're going to have any kind of impact on that is asinine, man. I mean, it's just we have way too many products that are reliant upon it. So trying to make that a cheaper resource, you know, or even maybe a cleaner resource could be a priority still.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's sad that it's not, unfortunately, but it's where we are.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with cleaner burning car engines and reducing pollution and going to hybrids. And, you know, I'm not crazy about electric cars because you still have to generate the power at the power plant. So whether you burn your fossil fuel, I don't even believe they're fossils, you know, and if you're burning your petroleum products, coal, oil, natural gas in a power plant and then sending that power over transmission lines where a good percentage is leaking out of them, you know, and then put it to your car, you know, and California said that, well, you can't charge your car up now because we're trying to conserve electricity, you know. And so if the government mm-hmm. controls your public utilities, which controls your power, they not only control your house, they also control your car now. So it's not a good idea to have mm-hmm. a lot of electric cars simply because that gives the government one more way to regulate where you can go and how far you can go, as opposed to gasoline, which you can purchase, you know, and go where you damn well please. You know, but
right. I think
fossil,
they proved that it a long time ago that it's not fossil fuels. Like it's a combination of things that are inside of the shale and the earth.
Yeah.
You know, there's multiple different things. I watched a video on it. I mean, I'm not a geologist by any means, so
uh-huh.
can't go through it. But I did watch the thing that proved that it's not fossil fuels. So.
Well, I've seen fossils. They're white bones, you know, embedded in rock, and you're not going to get oil out of that. I'm sorry. I mean, just observation will tell you.
Right. No,
but
sure.
we need to do a show on that. We need to look more into why we call it this. So that's why I use the word petroleum. These are petroleum products.
Right.
They're not fossil
fuels. Right.
But you still, you know, they're in plastics. You wouldn't have plastics without petroleum. A lot of nitrogen
right.
fertilizer comes from petroleum. You know, medicines, unfortunately, you know, there's a petroleum base of those. Petroleum's in it. That's why we have chemical engineers. So if you think you're going to get rid of, you know, this is why I say fossil fuels derogatorily, because that's what the wacko environmentalists use all the time. Well, this is, you know, this is going to run out. There's only so many fossils out there. That's part of the misinformation to label this as opposed to a petroleum thing. And to think that the world doesn't make petroleum like the world makes everything else, you know, with heat and pressure and temperature and different, you know, ions, molecules, and, you know, combining to form different crystalline structures, making different elements, to think that oil would be the exception is absurd. You know,
right,
of all
right.
of the elements
yeah,
we make.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so we get off track. But the point is that it's stupid to deny that, you know, to make your own energy because you're either going to have to buy it. So this question for both Jeanette and Derek, do you think there's some kind of mental gyration these people go through, their virtue signaling, they think, well, we're not the ones actually producing, you know, the petroleum products, so we're good people, but we have to buy it because it is a reality, we do need it, and that's why they go into the strategic petroleum reserve and why they import rather, you know, we're importing from Russia right now, so there's your Russian collusion, folks, you know, Brandon with Russia as opposed to American oil, you know. But do you think is this an ideological problem? It's not it's an economic problem, but Derek and Jeanette, do you think it comes from an ideological, you know, fallacy these people are telling themselves? Let's start with Derek.
I would agree. I mean, if you really go back, I mean, not to turn it political again, but, you know, I mean, if
oh, yeah,
you look at
that,
Al Gore, what he's done,
yeah.
You know, Al Gore started pushing this stuff 10, 15 years ago. And, you know, I mean, why don't you search it? Who was the main producer or who owned the company that was producing all these green products?
Mm-hmm.
It was Al Gore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so it was really, it was really for his best interest. And I mean, they're still even pushed today. So he used his political power, you know, to get people to buy these products that, research has shown have like a very minimal effect on, doing what they advertised. You know, but I mean, he's made millions, I mean, millions to triple millions. You know, off of the government mandates that were pushed to, his company produced those little rings that you had to put on top of the smokestacks for any manufacturing company. Yeah.
What a surprise.
You know, there were, yeah. His company produced all the things that went into power companies that were supposed to reduce, carbon and coal emissions and things like that. So, I mean, that's just scratching the surface of all the things that his company produced that he owns, 75 or 70% stake in, Anywho, you know what I mean? So this stuff has been pushed for I don't know how long. I mean, I'm sure there's money in it in some way, shape, or form. There's some kind of, you know, government folks that are involved in these companies or own percentages or whatnot. So, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I would say that it's not just an ideology from some people that think I'm better than thou. It's a money game.
Okay, that's a really good point. It reminds me of Dr. Fascist. That's what we call Fauci around here, Jeanette. Dr. Fascist.
Yeah, I know.
The genocidal, yes. Psychopathic, narcissistic, avaricious, compulsively lying vaccine drug pusher. You know, that's his title. But if you look
and
at what
he's getting paid,
he owns
mega billions.
Well, he owns patents. They just discovered $10 million. You remember when I said we need to audit Dr. Fascist because I know he's got money stuck away somewhere. He's not being honest about this. They found $10 million.
Yeah.
Actually, there's more. There's probably $40 million more. But this guy makes patents. You know, this guy owns patents. He owns license fees. He's getting rich. He's making probably billions himself off this. You've got Moderna fighting with the government NIH people for who owns, you know, the rights to Moderna's vaccine so they can make money off it. So the government, this is something we should probably look into. Maybe you can't. I can't. But the government, you know, using corporations. I mean, this is fascism. This is the definition of fascism, the merging of government and corporations into a single unit. We're seeing it with Al Gore with environmental stuff. They're actually passing laws requiring people to buy their products so they can get rich. And now they're mandating it with what I call the snake oil jabs now. You know, so this is probably a longstanding tradition that I really haven't looked into yet, but I think we might need to do something, if you can point me in the right direction, as to where to look for other examples of corporate government, you know, fascist mergings, you know, in the interest of profit by creating laws that mandate people to buy the products. Obamacare, there's a perfect example there too. The healthcare industry made billions off the fact that people were forced to buy healthcare or prove that they lose their tax refunds, you know, things like that. Derek, then we'll get
well,
to
all
Jeanette
it
comment.
Did was, yeah. All it did, yeah. You know, I mean, if your comparison, you know, something like that, I mean, it's, I don't think the two are a good comparison first because I think they did two different things. But I mean, you know, anybody who's tied into healthcare, I mean, also got rich off of that. You know, I mean, it forced premiums higher. It forced the cost of healthcare higher. You know, so I mean, I guess the same principle. You know, I wouldn't call it ideological. I mean, I think where we are in the U.S. right now is ideologically a lot of people want universal Medicare or universal health care, you know, so, and they're, you know, a lot of people are willing to pay higher taxes because they'd rather not pay the premium. So they'd really rather pay more in taxes than pay the premiums they're paying now, which I think is asinine. You know, but I know our health care system is not the greatest in the world. You know, and I know that it needs some reform, and I think we can do better than what we're doing, but I don't believe universal health care is the answer.
Well, that's what they're trying to do now. COVID, I want to get you into a second, but COVID is the perfect example of government health care. Mandated vaccines, denial of early treatment, the remdesivir ventilator death march. You know, this is government health care at work. This is exactly what it looks like. So, Jeanette, I know you're well-versed in national health care from New Zealand.
Yeah,
what do you think?
We've got it in New Zealand. We have what we call the Accident Compensation Corporation in New Zealand. It's a government department. If you injure yourself or anybody comes to New Zealand and goes skiing and breaks a leg, it's all free. So any tourist gets free medical care, any New Zealander gets free medical care if you have an accident or you need an operation. The problem with that is there's such a limited availability as far as the operations go. Case in point, I had a hip replacement 2 years ago. I had it all organized, had it all everything done within a month. Just after I got home from hospital, there was an article in the local newsletter about a gentleman who'd been waiting for government health care for a hip replacement, and he'd been waiting for over 5 years. He'd lost his job. His wife had lost her job because she had to be home to look after him. They've lost their house, and he still hasn't got a hip replacement. So that's government health care for you. It doesn't work.
That's pretty much a commonality I've heard from many of them. I mean, I've heard stories from people in Canada with a very similar, you know, and I mean, I can really relate. I mean, if you want to talk universal health care in the military, you know, the military TRICARE, which is our health care system, which it's all covered. Everybody's covered 100%. Your family's covered is universal health care. So when you're talking about common cold or going to the doctor for, you know, some stitches or something like that, you know, just basic things. Yeah, super convenient, super free. They triage that stuff very, very easy, right? Now, if you talk about surgeries, you know, I mean, I had to have a major surgery. I had to get on a list. I had to wait. You know, I had to wait for people to fall off. I had to get on a priority. The doctor that you were assigned is the only doctor. If you choose another doctor, you get in the back of the stack again. You know, so it's just, it took, I want to say for me, almost a year to get the surgery. You know, I mean, I had to go through many, many different processes. So, you know, I mean, while you maybe had to pay on the outside, if that surgery was a little bit higher priority, you know, for me, I mean, I'm left arm dominant. I had issues with the problem I had in my shoulder on the left side. So if I could have gotten it sooner, it would have been much better for me. I mean, considering how I am now, and I had the surgery 8 years ago, you know, so I'm not a big fan of universal healthcare. I mean, I think it does have some good aspects to it. And I think that if we maybe did healthcare a little bit different, or got the government to do it where we could get basic medical care for, you know, an ultra low cost or free, I think that would solve probably 80% of our problem.
Yeah. It's like when we come over here, we buy a travel insurance from New Zealand because it is far cheaper than for us to go on medical insurance over here. Well, we've got private medical insurance in New Zealand. It costs us about $400 a month. Now, my husband's 71, I'm 55. $400 a month for anything specialist and surgical, which I think is cheap. Like my hip was $25,000, so I consider myself ahead of the ballpark there. We come here for the last 7 months we've been here. It cost us about $1,600 total for the both of us. If we were to buy medical insurance here for the two of us, I quoted it was more than $1,800 per month for the two of us to be here, to buy medical insurance here. So I, the government are ramping up the costs, or the big farmers ramping up the costs to make it out of reach for so many people here. You can understand why they haven't got medical, why they just have, they've got no care, they've got nothing.
Yeah,
and it's the sort of people in that low economic situation that need it.
Yeah. A lot of people will go, I mean, for major surgeries, they'll go to other countries because it's cheaper in those other countries. I mean, I have a, you know, a friend and client that went to Spain for heart surgery because he could get it over there for 10 grand and they were wanting to charge, you know, 60 to 70,000 in the U.S. You know,
it's
so,
and
it is, you know, so. You know, I think if the government really wanted to do anything, you know, if they did more cost analyzation and maybe added some subsidies or some kind of control on it, you know, where they couldn't charge these astronomical prices, you know, I mean, when I had lost my dad to cancer, you know, 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago this year, you know, it's looking at the bill because he was under TRICARE. He was in the hospital for like 10 or 14 days, and the bill was something like $180,000. It's ridiculous, right? You know, I mean, just kind of sifting through, they were charging him $25 for Tylenol.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, I understand the nurse is dropping it off, but that's ridiculous. And the fact is the hospital is probably charging TRICARE because they had to pay it. You know, and it's just I think stuff like that is criminal, because if people have good insurance, I'm sure there's some gouging going on in some way, shape, or form on a pretty regular basis.
Mm. Yep. Well, see, New Zealand, if you go, if you end up in hospice care, it's free. Any cancer treatment is free, but same again, if you haven't, sorry, got a frog. If you haven't got medical insurance, you will still be treated for that. So basically you are triaged through, but any elective surgeries, you just wait and wait.
Right.
And your quality of life is nothing until you get that surgery.
Wow.
Yeah, this is, I've just been, Janet? Just been fascinated listening to you guys. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, what were you saying, Derek?
I thought it was just me and Janet. I thought you fell off, man.
No, I'm still here. I'm just listening. But, you know, when we get these great opportunities, this is what I love about, you know, being the boss around here is that, you know, I'm learning when not to talk, which is good because I just let you guys go. And the crossovers, we have Jeanette's been, you know, on the show since for almost an hour now. And the ability to cross over, I mean, we had Shirley talking to Ellen in Belize. You know, we had, I was talking to Shirley for a while. Then Jeanette joined us, and then Jeanette and Shirley talked. And I said I was going to let them talk. And then, of course, I jumped in way too much like I usually do, and now I get you guys chatting away. I mean, the crossovers I find fascinating. I don't know why more radio shows don't do this. They give you 2 minutes and you're gone. I don't do that. So let's in the time before Chappie, I don't think is going to be here for half an hour, which is unfortunate because Chappie, Donnie Chapman, does gun competitions here at Escambia River Gun Club, and so I thought it'd be, since you're still here, Jeanette, it'd be really cool to be able to match you guys up. But he may not do it. You can stick around with me and chat some more. I've got lots of things to talk about, so feel free. I'm just enjoying having you on the show. So this is now the Greg and Jeanette show.
Thank you,
Derek. I'm sorry, Jeanette. Go ahead. Yeah.
No. I'm just listening in. Carry on.
Okay. All right. Well, if you guys want to carry on too, Derek, do you have a few more minutes, or are you going to have to go pretty soon?
I got a couple. You're good. Okay.
All right, well, let's get into inflation then. We haven't talked about that, and we can talk about this, you know, on other countries as well. Jeanette, we all knew this was coming. Derek and I talked about this well over a year ago. The whole idea of it being transitory, we're just laughing our butts off, you know, that this is, oh, inflation is transitory. You can't spend several $1 trillion. You can't print all this money. You can't borrow all this money and have it, and all of a sudden think that, well, it's just transitory inflation. So what's the latest word on this, and what are the experts saying at this particular time, Derek?
So, I mean, in my personal opinion, I think the news is kind of making this a little bit bigger than it is. Of course, inflation is bad. You know, we don't need to see inflation. But the last report that we had, inflation was at 7.3%. So inflation, you know, in the past quarter has ticked a smidgen higher to 7.5%. So, you know, the Fed hasn't really stepped in and raised rates yet. So it should have been anticipated that we should have seen a little bit of a rise in inflation. You know, so I think the market yesterday had a little bit of a temper tantrum, you know, over, you know, news that we kind of knew was coming, and it actually wasn't all that bad. I mean, going up, you know, 0.2%, you know, for most people that they said haven't even paid attention to inflation yet, that they're still seeing people purchasing at the same rate, to me is a little astonishing, but ideally, you know, a bad inflation report is bad for the market, you know, so the market yesterday, I mean, we've actually had a rally for the past 7 to 8 days, market kind of recovering some of its losses, roughly, I don't know, you could say 3 to 4%, that it's kind of ticked back up, which is good. I mean, it kind of gets people on the good notes again, you know, but yesterday we kind of got slapped in the face. So, you know, hopefully today kind of things pan out. We go for the next couple weeks and the market can continue a rally because while news is bad, the market really doesn't have enough bad news right now to not at least be going in a forward direction. You know, but everybody, obviously, investor sentiment right now with waiting on what the Fed's going to do and how fast they're going to raise interest rates, investor sentiment is low. You know, so it makes things a little hard in the market.
Yeah, I got Chappie in line too. I'm going to bring him on in a second. Jeanette, you're going to enjoy this, and I actually messaged Chappie real quickly too, that you're both competitive shooters, and so this is going to be kind of a fun chat. So we got the rest of the show if you can stick around for a while. But back to inflation, it seems like the if it's not accelerating as fast, and if something's changed, if because they didn't do the Build Back Better program, they didn't borrow those extra trillions of dollars, maybe that's being reflected in the market now. I don't know. But my guess is, my speculation is that the Fed is going to raise interest rates too late, that the inflation rates actually be lowering as they raise rates to lower the inflation rate. So they're too little too late, and the lagging effect of raising those rates is going to cause, you know, more recession later on than inflation correction. What do you think?
I mean, that holds water. I would say that the chance is there. In my personal opinion, I don't believe so. I think the Fed's going to probably have to get somewhere around 1% before we're going to kind of in my hopes, I guess, is. Mm-hmm. When the Fed raises the rate, inflation kind of tops and then kind of starts subsiding. That's what I'm hoping for, right? You know, what I think is going to happen is the Fed's going to raise the rate. I think the first one they're going to do here in March is going to be 0.5%.
That's big.
It is big. Yeah. Typically they do 0.25%. I think they're going to go 0.5% to kind of see if they can get a wrangle on it. The market's going to react negatively to 0.5%. It should be very short-lived as they normally are, you know, maybe a few days of volatility and then kind of go back in the same direction. I think after they do that, when the next inflation report comes out, it should kind of maybe go up a little bit then. And then when they raise rates the next time by another 0.5%, you should kind of see it peak out. It go back the other direction. That's what I'm thinking is going to happen. And you have to understand there is still a recipe that says inflation can continue on. You know, if inflation continues on, it gets up around 8-9%. I mean, that's going to get into territory where the Fed's going to do, you know, what Jimmy Carter had to do. They're going to have to get more aggressive with the raises. They've already kind of tightened the money supply to where they want to. They've got a little bit more to go. And once they do that, you know, I mean, they've got to get control over inflation. So that's kind of the bad side. That's a 10% area kind of thing of something that could happen. And if it does happen, I mean, obviously, what's going to fix that quicker when everybody panics? Recession.
Well, that's what I'm thinking anyway. So, if people start pulling back their spending, you know, if people are actually forced to go to work and they're making less than they were making with stimulus payments, you know, we don't have the Build Back Better buster disaster. They're actually saving a little bit of money. Maybe things are, you know, some of the causes of inflation are weakening slightly. And like I say, they're always behind. It's like generals to fight the last war. You know, we've got the Fed fighting the last, you know, inflation battle. It's too late. You know, because it takes too long. It's like the Titanic, you know, turn the rudder. Okay, we'll wait, you know, and eventually the ship turns.
Right.
You know, too late.
Right.
You know, so I see they're always behind what's really happening. I'm just wondering what the market thinks. Let me get your last point. Then I want to bring Chappie on and to talk to Jeanette a little bit. And we're going to have a little fun here with gun competitions. And of course, you're welcome to stay if you have the opportunity to do that. So let's get your contact information again, Derek, just in case you do have to go or when you have to go. And then we'll make sure I get that covered. And a last word
from
you, sir.
No. Thanks for having me, Jeanette. It was a pleasure talking with you. Some
great
good notes.
Great talking to you too.
I use New Zealand in many of my conversations when people worry about bonds because a lot of people don't know New Zealand, Australia, U.S., Iceland, and I'm missing one, but those are the only countries that have bonds that are like AA and AAA that are the most well bought in the world, right? So that means your
Long
currency
may they
systems
continue.
Are extremely strong. kudos. Obviously, the U.S. buys New Zealand bonds.
Oh, that's interesting. And China buys our bonds.
Not bad.
What a wonderful
That's right. Yeah, I mean, our bonds are still good and strong. But no, it was a pleasure talking with you. Didn't mean anything by the joke about getting up your guns. It was meant in good form. Thanks again. This is Derek Park with Edward Jones. Again, if you need any financial advice, it's 850-995-0082.
There you go. We'll have to get those international calls. You need a Skype line for our international listeners too. Thanks, Derek. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
And of course, Jeanette, if you want to, you know, join Shirley and then stick around for Derek's financial report, you guys had a great chat. That was really interesting. So, you know,
yeah, it was
kind
good.
Yeah. Well, we go all over the place here. Friday is mostly a gun day, just because that's just sort of how it worked out. The person you're missing, you didn't get a chance to talk to, so you might want to call next week, Jim Dykes, who is the director of Florida Carry. We're trying to get open carry and constitutional carry here in Florida. But one of our newer resident reporters here, Donnie Chapman, known as Chappie, does the gun competition, gun tech, and whatever he wants to do report. So, Chappie, welcome. We've got Jeanette Sharp, who is a New Zealand top competitor for a couple of decades here. So I thought it'd be kind of cool for you guys to chat. But let's get the announcements out first, find out what's happening in Scambia River, and then we'll go and then I'll let you guys have some fun here for a while. So, Chappie, welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jeanette.
How are you?
So I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Great, thank you. Great.
So I understand you're in the competition shooting as well.
Yeah, I was. I haven't done a lot in the last probably 12, 18 months, but more sort of into the administration side of it now than before, but yeah, still enjoy it, still enjoy watching, still enjoy taking part. It's a great bunch of folks. Like-minded individuals, I think you call it.
Yes, exactly. Feeling belonging to that tribe, I guess you could say. We have the same thing here. So what discipline do you shoot?
mainly IPSC, yeah,
okay.
Or USPSA as it's known here.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, Greg, we have, you know, of course, USPSA, the United States version of IPSC, pretty similar, mm-hmm. some little different rules, especially the targets. They're a little bit different
mm-hmm.
shape here in America, which we still like shooting the IPSC as we call it the turtle shaped target. They're actually a little bit different, but and then some of the movement stuff. I like your guys' rules on the holsters a lot better than us. You know, you guys can use more race holsters for like carry optics and production versus here. Either got to be because once you move over, especially your carry optics with a race holster, then it bumps you in the open and everything else like that. So, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's great. And then, you know, of course, the U.S. team has, you know, when we're doing the world shoot, we follow the IPSC rules, which I don't know if world shoot's going to happen this year. It's been pushed off. So world shoot, Greg, it's kind of like the Olympics of IPSC, and it's, what, every 3 years, I believe? You know, it was supposed to happen last summer, and, of course, COVID, and hopefully going to happen this summer, but...
Yeah.
Nobody's
just wear a mask.
It, so.
You can wear a mask when you're shooting. I mean, you've got earplugs and goggles. Why don't you just, let's go all out here. Be total
Why not a diver
just...
suit?
Exactly.
Diver
flippers.
Suit with mask and snorkel. Yeah.
I like it. Painter's mask. Yeah, we can do painter's mask, a headset. You know, we can put a welder's thing on top of that, you know, with that, so you can't see any light. It'd be great.
And you can social distance. The timer picks up shots from the shooter 10 feet away.
That's right.
So you're good to go.
Uh-huh. Put a mask over the muzzle of the gun for the first shot, so it's pure. Yeah, we can do all those things.
Yep.
Think of the possibilities. We can have COVID competition. You know, COVID safe gun competitions, because you know that out in the fresh air and the sunshine, you know, viruses really do well with that ultraviolet light. Yep. Now I'm being facetious.
So Jenna,
So
I have a question for you, Jenna. Is a steel challenge picking up in New Zealand? Has it started becoming popular over there? Okay.
It is popular. I don't know how much, but you know about New Zealand, but geographically we're pretty challenged in the fact that we have this big moat right around us between the two main islands, so it makes travel rather difficult. So you have to fly everywhere, and that brings in the airlines and not wanting those long-range hole-punching devices in your luggage. So we do struggle a bit, and it's costly to travel in New Zealand. It's actually cheaper, well, more cost-effective to travel to Australia and compete there, but they have different magazine rules and regulations to what we have too. They're more like Australia with the limited 10, California with the limited 10 rules, whereas New Zealand we can still have full-size magazines.
You guys a little bit more free over in New Zealand.
At the moment, long may that continue, but I'm not holding my breath.
No, yeah. I'm not sure if Greg lets you know, so I'm retired Air Force, and so I've been on many deployments. I've been deployed with a lot of Kiwis, as you guys call yourselves, and you guys are a great group of people, so I just want to let you know that.
Some more than others,
but
it's the same everywhere.
Oh, yeah. So the reason why I brought up Steel Challenge, our club also runs a Steel Challenge. So tomorrow we're having Steel Challenge at Gambia River Gun Club. And I was just out there the other day setting up all the stuff. We set up 5 of the 8 stages. So we're doing that. We're actually looking at trying to run Steel Challenge twice a month, hopefully starting next month.
Nice.
Running twice a month. And then I'm the president of our USPSA club out there, which last week and was supposed to be our inaugural match for the range. Well, weather didn't play on our side. It was way too muddy, so we went on the air of safety and decided to cancel it. So March 5th, we're gonna have a really big match with a lot of sponsors, you know, the stuff to raffle. But yeah, we went on the side of safety. Are you guys noticing over there, do you guys cancel, like how do your match directors take when do they decide to cancel a match, if it's bad weather, other factors, or do they let the match go? Because I've been to other matches where rain or shine, they just let it happen, and it's everybody's not happy.
Yeah.
I mean, I know some people want to shoot, but there's a fine line.
New Zealand doesn't cancel because we're an island nation. It's going to rain. You just have to.
Yeah.
general rule of thumb, if you take your wet weather gear, you won't need it. If you don't take it, you do need it. So you just shoot through it.
Which
it can be
master
very
of thread, a hard time wanting to cancel it, but seeing how we were going to have a bunch of new shooters, like this is the first time shooting USPSA, I was like, that's not the day to learn to compete,
it's not
run and gun.
Accidents happen. Exactly.
And it wasn't even the chance of a negligent discharge, you know, somebody slipping and twisting their knee or something like that. So.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
well, let me ask you both a question.
Going.
All right, why don't you go ahead? Yeah, that's a good question. I had another one. But, yeah, let's – Donnie, keep going. You're doing great. this is interesting.
So how's the ammo shortage? So as you probably heard here in the States, you know, ammo shortage, especially components, are really hard to get right now. Especially myself, I'm also a federal firearms license holder, and I'm an ammo manufacturer and a firearms manufacturer. So, of course, components are hard to get. So we're reaching out overseas to, you know, source primers. How is it in New Zealand as far as getting ammunition?
It's starting to bite over there too. Of course, a lot of because geographically, again, it's hard to import a lot of ammunition. 99% of competitive shooters in New Zealand load their own ammo because A, it's cheaper, and B, you can get that load that works your firearm far better than a lot of factory stuff, fighting recoil, that sort of thing. So, 99% of people load their own and load for other people over there. It's just cost prohibitive to buy ammo. The amount of shooters, it's prohibitive to import ammunition. It's just too expensive.
Yeah. How about as far as components and powder and primers, besides being you guys geographically located, is it starting harder to find right now because of the supply and demand?
Yeah, the pinch has started. It had about 19 months ago it started, and it's getting that way again now. It's still that way. We've got friends with a gun store in our local town, and he's buying anything he can get now. I mean, the choices aren't there. You just buy what you can get, and you have to pay through the nose for it, which has to be passed on, of course.
Yeah, that's what the deal we're working on. I'm trying to – well, I have a source. I'm trying to import in about 1.3 million rounds of 9mm for gun businesses right now, so – it's a struggle worldwide. It's sad.
Yep.
It's hard for our sport because that's what we thrive on. And of course, you need to practice. You can only dry fire so much. You have to get under the gun and actually get some rounds down range. So, Now, Greg, what were you going to say?
Well, I got a bunch of questions here, but the first thing was on the civilian use of ammunition. Is the fact that New Zealand is restricting, civilians from even owning guns. It's government guns and military guns and gang guns is what we were talking about earlier. I'm wondering the same thing here. If you cut back on the guns, we had a great theory that the gangs are an integral part of government in the civilian disarmament program to make the citizenry scared so that they'll that they'll run to the government. Oh, protect me, please. The government said, we'll protect you. You just have to give up your guns. Oh, here they are. We know how that works. But
they follow the rules.
Well, exactly. Yeah. But if they're cutting back on the amount of ammunition that, I remember when I was competing, like a box of 45s would be like about, $12, $13. 9mm was about $8 or $9 for a box of 50 rounds. That's not bad. For a low level competitor that's not shooting 1,000 rounds a week, that's not a bad thing. For the people that reload, and I'd reload it for a while. For those who don't know, for our worldwide audience and the folks interested in reloading, the components are pretty simple for ammunition. You got a case which holds the powder, you got a primer which ignites the powder, you got a bullet which moves by the gas that's created by the powder, and out it goes. So as long as you have bullets, powder, cases, and primers, you can make ammunition. And the brass cases are very reusable up to a certain point. But I found collecting them was too much of a pain in the butt, so I stopped reloading just because I don't shoot at the level. But if you get rid of the civilian market, if you get rid of the plinkers, the weekend shooters, all the folks, especially in this country, that would go out and shoot for fun, you've got a lower market.
Yeah.
You've got fewer people, and that's going to raise the price by itself too. Jeanette, go ahead. You've got a couple of yups in there. So, you're agreeing. What do you think?
Totally. Yeah, okay. The conspiracy theorist part of me is maybe this is all part of the plan as well. There's just so much going on, it's hard to believe what is real and what isn't just at the minute. But, yeah, the harder it gets for people to own firearms and to feed the firearms, the more people you're going to get drop out of the market. And, okay, it might leave some over for the rest of us. Eventually, they're going to keep cutting it back and cutting it back and cutting it back. So, yeah, start storing it alongside your freeze-dried food, maybe, in a nice
container. The other problem.
When you need it.
That's the other problem. Are people hoarding? They're not shooting it. They're just not using it. They're buying stuff just to have. You know, so yeah. Chappie, let's civilian market here for shooting. You know, and of course a lot of the civilians here used to get military surplus. I think that's dried up too by regulation. So if you cut back all these cutbacks here, Chappie, what's your view on this here in terms of availability and cost?
Same thing. People are hoarding it, and then I've seen people like go to Academy that will just, if they see ammo on the shelf, they'll buy it, and it might not even be a caliber of a firearm they own. They're just up trying to get it, and that's making the market worse. Yeah. And then, of course, you know, we had all these new shooters in 2020, Greg, that, you know, bought a firearm, and what's going to happen? They're going to want, you know, ammunition to shoot that new firearm. So, of course, that drove up, you know, supply and demand even more. And then, of course, the people hoarding it because nobody knew the outcome of the world. And so now, all that does is drive the domino effect, because now everybody's going to hoard even more because they're like, oh, it's there, let's get it. And then it hops. And then basically these companies can, you know, control the price because they control the market, because they know people are going to pay for it. So, it's a vicious circle that I just don't see ending anytime soon, because then also now you throw in, let's break it down even more, raw components, which – now we're talking, you know, all the travel and everything with the truckers and shipping, and it's not looking good. So.
Well, let's get down even further. Where does lead come from?
Majority of our lead comes from, you guessed it, China.
Well, that's interesting. How about copper for copper jackets? Where does that come from?
Well, thanks to our former Vice President Obama, it was coming. We had a big copper area up in Kansas, but he added those EPA restrictions, so we're getting all ours from overseas, and guess where that's coming from?
China. Okay, I'm seeing a pattern here. Yeah. I'm seeing something develop. Okay, brass.
Yeah.
Derek, let's go to brass. Where does brass come from?
We source a lot of our own, but the majority of it, here's what happens is, everybody thinks they recycle here, and, you know, what they're doing is giving back here. Well, a lot of these big recycling plants ship overseas to China. So
China's getting our brass. Okay.
China's getting our brass.
Okay. We're seeing a common thread. All right. So what's left? Primers? And the chemical components of primers? Go ahead.
The majority of the chemical components for that comes from Italy. Well, and then Italy had their big whole, you know, everybody had COVID there. So,
who's connected to China.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, and then, of course, with Italy, you know, they only work like half a day, and then they have a holiday like every other month or every other week.
Well, that's because they're all 90 years
old.
You know,
yeah, exactly.
Up in northern Italy. Yeah.
Yep.
They don't have kids.
Fascinating. Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah,
so now,
goes back,
go ahead.
So we're buying stuff, I guess you can say in air quotes, from our enemy. So...
So in other words, to generalize, our Second Amendment at this point, to a large extent, is dependent on China tossing over the raw materials to make ammo, or the ammo itself. Does China make ammunition for us? Let's go the whole way.
Should
Do
we
they?
Say that again?
Does China make ammunition for sale to the United States? Communist China.
Norinco? There's Norinco ammo. I think that comes from.
Yeah, Norinco, I haven't seen Norinco in a while here, but yeah, I mean, they do.
Is that China or Taiwan, Norinco?
What about Tula ammo? Tula ammo?
What kind of ammo?
Tula.
Tula?
Don't know it.
Yeah,
Chappie?
It's Russian. That's Russian.
Okay.
Which they're all in bed with
which
each other.
Which is also another finger in the pie.
Yeah.
And they have steel cased ammo. Now, I know we're getting really technical for a lot of people, and I'll make this more general for folks in a bit. But that's kind of what Friday is, you know. So I mean, we do technical economics, we do technical gun stuff, we do legal technical stuff, you know, on Thursdays. I mean, so I never underestimate the intelligence of my audience. If you don't know stuff, just ask, just call and ask, or go on chat. We can do that too. In fact, I haven't checked live chat for a while. No questions. Okay, fine. What I'm thinking is now is the time to do something totally outrageous. And again, the reason I get a little bit of background noise on one of your lines. So just if you hear something,
I think
then,
it's me because I moved outside so my husband can make his smoothie for breakfast.
Okay. But, so we don't get to hear the blender? Okay, fine. Yeah, put him on the line too if you want. You know, put on speaker. We'll get him too. Anyway, but what I'm thinking is that, well, here's what we do at Action Radio. So my belief is the way you combat this kind of absurdity, if you argue against it, they've already got the arguments against you. If you try and do the emotional appeal, that's not going to work because they've got far more emotions as well. And they've got the government on their side. Of course, the big government wants, and everybody's got their hand in the pocket from, I'm sure there's some connections with ammo manufacturers in the military. They already have contracts, so they don't need as much of the civilian market. So I know all that stuff. So my solution to this is to be totally outrageous. We have a bill on our website, writeyourlaws.com. That's writeyourlaws. And Jeanette, I'll send you all of our gun related bills and see what you want to do with them. Send them to New Zealand. That would be pretty funny. But one of them,
wouldn't it?
Exactly. But see, I fight absurdity with outrageousness, and so my outrageous bill is a Second Amendment bill that actually offers tax credits and tax deductions, credits are better, you know, especially for low-income folks, you know, so they can purchase, as the liberals would say, have access to quality firearms and ammunition. And so the idea of fight, you know, I would fight this by saying, look, not only are we not going to let you do restrictions, we're going to have tax deductions. We're going to encourage firearms use. We're going to encourage firearms ownership. We're going to let low-income people not be discriminated against because they're low-income and they can't afford the expensive guns. And if you want a good quality gun, it's going to cost you several hundred dollars. So why can't poor folks, you know, have their Second Amendment rights as much as anybody else? So now it becomes a civil rights issue, right? And so, of course, I have another bill idea. I haven't written this one yet, but to include gun owners under civil rights protection. Also, ideology is a protected class, too. So conservatives don't get discriminated against, and we fall under the 14th Amendment protections of equal protection. This is how I throw things out of my head. So if you folks want to get behind this, and I think the you know, our gun lobby, local and national, you know, the gun groups, you know, in both New Zealand and here, really need to fight this with something totally outrageous and say, look, not only do we not accept what you're doing, we want to have tax credits. We want people to be able to charge against their taxes their guaranteed constitutional God-given rights. That's how I want to take this on.
And so that's where New Zealand is screwed. We do not have a constitution. And we did have a Bill of Rights up to about 2 months ago. And under the Emergency Powers Act, the government took that off as well. So things are pretty grim over there currently.
We do need the citizen legislature. Yeah. We need to start writing. We need to reinstate that. We need to have, see, in the United States, although they still try to do it, they use things like an emergency declaration, the same thing, or it's for the public good or the greater good, or it's just a reasonable restriction on your right, or they say the government has a compelling state interest. It's something the Supreme Court made up. None of that stuff is valid because the Constitution in the United States does not have an on and off switch. You cannot suspend it. There's no suspension clause. The worst emergency in the world, you still have your full constitutional rights. Now, whether governments will block it with the force of their guns is another story. I'm not saying that they won't do it. I'm saying it's not legal and it's not constitutional. So what I'd love to do with you and the people that we can get in contact with in New Zealand is to reinstate that. I'm already going to be working with Jen Clark, Australia. In fact, both of you folks, if you get a chance, listen to my show yesterday. First 2 hours were unbelievable with what's going on in Australia. We're going to write a Bill of Rights for them. I'm going to work with Australians and they're going to do it. I don't write for other countries. I will show you how it's done, but I don't believe that it's my job. It would be arrogant of me to assume that you are going to want to write what I want to write. You know, so because I'm looking at through American eyes. So I want New Zealanders to write New Zealand law, Australians to write Australian law, Canadians to write Canadian law. And if we do this from the citizens and we give this to the government and say, this is how we consent to be governed. And if you don't consent to what we consent to, we've got an election coming up and we can take care of this. You know, but this is how I think it needs to be handled, with brave, bold, direct steps. And because people don't even think this is possible. It doesn't occur to New Zealanders or Americans that we can get tax credits. We can charge off the price of a gun on our taxes, and that's a civil rights issue because it's a constitutionally guaranteed right that the government can't touch. Well, if it's a constitutionally guaranteed right, then you have to be able to afford it. Otherwise, you can't have access to it. See how this works?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep.
Change your thinking, change the world.
Mm,
see that?
Exactly.
What do you think? Yeah. Okay.
Sounds good.
Chappy? Okay. Chappy?
Yep.
Can we get a local gun lobby going here with some of the local gun stores in Northwest Florida, and then we expand that across Florida, and then we start talking about, we want tax credits for gun purchases. We want, you know, low and middle income people to be able to afford their constitutional rights as a civil rights issue. Now you've got an emotional argument. Isn't this interesting?
Yeah.
All right. Pianki's going to join us. Our regular caller, Bill Ryder, you know, caller extraordinaire. So let's see. Pianki, have you been listening? We got Jeanette from New Zealand who's here, you know, competing with the guns. Actually, you guys are pretty close because she's – are you in Shreveport now, Jeanette?
Yes. Yes, I am.
Okay, I think Pianki. I think Pianki's in – Pianki, where are you in Louisiana, roughly?
Oh, off Baton Rouge, down in my winter home.
Way down south.
I thought you guys might have been
yeah, I've been listening to you since Alan was on. Alan didn't have much much of a delicious menu to speak of.
Well,
but no.
You got to ask him. You got to call and ask what's for dinner in Belize. Otherwise, that's your department, Pianki. You know, you're the food guy. You're the food critic for Action Radio. And now presenting Action Radio's food critic, Pianki.
Oh.
I'm sorry, go ahead. What's on your mind?
You know, you talk about these ammunition shortages. Well, that seemingly would be an opportunity for Americans, some American adventurers, to take on that as a business and start producing ammunition back in the United States.
Yes.
Can you imagine if we went to war with China, they would have to ration us with ammunition?
How about that? Yeah, Chappie? Yeah, how come we don't have an American business that's sort of, you know, picking up the slack here?
Well, we do. So actually, Fiocchi is building a plant in Arkansas, and there's a couple other companies that are starting to build here in the States. However, the process is you have to deal with a lot of EPA and OSHA restrictions. For instance, primer factories, you have to be miles away from everybody. They almost have to have like a moat around it, and the buildings have to be built to code where because it's very volatile, the primer building.
No, I know that, but I was just thinking of nuclear power plants and oil refineries and military bases that store nuclear weapons and all this kind of thing, and yet the primer factories have to have a moat? Seems like a little discrimination going on here.
Yeah.
Chappy?
Yeah, but so they have to have, of course, like the roofs can't be secure. They have to be like held on by cable so that if the roof, you know, if the explosion happened, the roofs can blow off but not fly off. So yeah, there,
and
I mean,
take
there's,
out the township
there's a
next
few.
Door.
Yeah, there's a few. I mean, start. It doesn't happen overnight. I know. I have one friend that is in the business, and he's actually since 2017 been working on building a primer factory. So this is way before this whole COVID bubble. But then, of course, there's my other conspiracy thing too. Of course, there's one big company that has, you know, the monopoly, the company that owns the umbrella company that owns Federal and CCI and all the other stuff.
Oh,
gonna,
let's hear it. This is a perfect place.
Yeah,
for
well, they're going to do everything. You know, they're the ones making it all, and of course, all our stuff going
they?
To Europe. And
who are they?
Vista Outdoors, who owns Federal, CCI, Blazer.
Wait, hold on a second. I want to get this really clearly stated. Okay, so first of all, whenever I hear conspiracy theory, to me it's either conspiracy or it's not. And if you have a theory about it, that's fine, but I don't like the term simply because people immediately start going crazy and but which company are we talking about? Who really clearly, if you spell it out if you want to, who owns our amp companies? What's it called?
Vista Outdoors.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, they own, you know, Federal, Winchester, CCI. They have the whole umbrella, so they're running the gamut. Well, you know, of course, there's president speaks every several months saying, oh, we're working over time and all this other stuff, but yet we're not seeing any of these products here. So when I'm on these Zoom calls overseas trying to source products,
okay,
I'm being told by all the other companies over there, like, oh, we're having a hard time getting our European product, but we're getting your guys' stuff every day. So to me,
that's
it's almost like I think the government has a hand in it, you know, where they're telling these companies, okay, you can produce and sell.
Mm-hmm.
You're just not going to produce so much and sell to
America.
U.S. businesses.
The land of the free, the home of the brave, the land of the restrained, the home of the cowardly. Yeah. Okay. So who owns?
Kind of like, you know, they do with the price of grain, corn, you know, will they pay farmers so much not to, you know, grow on so many acres of land each year, so that drives the price of corn to go up and everything else.
Yeah, price support. So that came in during the Depression. So are there price supports for ammo? Are they paid not to produce ammo?
There could be. Or, you know, there's other ways, I think, around. Like, okay, hey, make it happen. Maybe they're getting tax breaks. Maybe they're not getting audited as much by, you know, the ATF, or, you know, OSHA is not coming down on their factories, or the EPA is not being as restricted. There's probably some in between the lines, but
can you look into that for us?
They own the monopoly.
Can you look into that? Well, let's get a report on it. Let's do. We have a special investigations page on the Action Radio Gun Group. Let's get something out here. We've got Alan working on this mystery hospital ship that's taking COVID patients off the cruise lines. We're going to try and find out what that ship is, because nobody's talking about it. It's not on the internet anywhere, but it's in Belize. Okay, this is why I have international sources. This is why this is so much fun to do this show, because we get to expose things that nobody else does, because they're all cowards. Well, not all of them, but most of there's a lot of cowards out there. Revolver, Rebel News, there's some good sources, and they're coming up. In the same way, we need ammo manufacturers. This sounds like an antitrust problem to me. This sounds like the fact that this one company owns all these separate federal, do they own Federal Winchester? You know, those are some of the, you know, and then, of course, Federal, I think Winchester owns American Eagle and all these other different brands. You know, if they're all under Blazer, if the CCI, if they're all under the same company, that's a monopoly. That's illegal.
Yeah.
So my question is, who owns Vista Outdoors? Are they owned by somebody else, or is that its own company?
No, that's their own.
Okay. Company. Who runs Vista? Who's
stock, too.
What? Okay. Well, we're going to talk to Derek about this. Oh, yeah. I'm going to be talking to Derek during the week. So who's the CEO of Vista Outdoors? Do you know?
Not off the top of my head. Let's find out,
because I want to find out if they contribute to Democrats or Republicans, too. I want to find out where they get their money. I want to find out where the money goes. I want to know who these people are.
I have the name.
Go for it.
It's Christopher T. Metz, M-E-T-Z.
M as in mama? Or N as in November?
M as in Michael.
M as in murder.
Yeah.
Christopher T. Metz. Yeah, I forgot my phonetic alphabet for M. What is M? Mike. There we go.
Michael.
Yeah. Sorry. Metz. Yeah, it's been too long since I've been flying. That's my thing. You know, I want to get back to that as well as shooting. Probably after CPAC. I got to go to CPAC and, you know, tell all those reporters that we exist for all these other places. Uh-huh. They can start. You know, I sent out a press release last night, so you all should have that this morning, too. Okay. Pianki, back to you, because we've sort of... did you have another comment? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, well, Greg, you're talking about the monopoly. You know, remember several years ago, remember when the government went after Microsoft for being a monopoly, because remember they were trying to be the monopoly as far as internet providers or whatever. Remember when you bought a computer, they were trying to be the only one, and they got fined by the government for that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but here's the quite, this is the opposite. Here, these guys have the monopoly, nothing's happening to them.
Yeah, they're not producing the ammo. There's supposed to be something called, you know, an open market where you don't have what they call barriers to entry. I've talked to Derek about this all. This is my college economics. And so if one company is too big and they make it impossible for other companies to come in, this is why big companies love regulations. Because they keep the competitors out. So this company, Vista Outdoors, might very well be, you know, working with the EPA and with the Brandon insurrection and other illegal parts of our government, you know, to conspire to keep, you know, a low-cost alternative ammo producer, you know, who gets a good deal on brass, who finds their own lead, who has different suppliers, puts together the ammo, you know, more quickly and cheaply, and can distribute it more easily because it's made here domestically than some of this large company that seems to be controlling the ammo market. We've got a problem here. If all our ammo comes from one company, basically, that's insane. That's crazy. And especially if you have if you have import restrictions as well, then they're starving our guns for ammo unintentionally.
Yeah. That's the problem I'm running into is the import. You know, when stuff comes here, I have to pay 11% fee at the port as a manufacturing fee because, Uncle Sam wants to get there. Since we didn't manufacture here, they're going to charge us because it's manufactured somewhere else. So It's ridiculous. Yeah.
It is.
Back in the day, there was a company there in St. Louis on Goodfellow and Highway 70 called Chevy Shell. They used to produce all the ammunition that was being used in the Vietnam War.
Huh.
And that was a building that had an open roof. I thought that they landed helicopters that threw the roof, but no, they tore that building down some time ago. But that's a very, very peculiar position to be in, what you just described, that needs to be addressed.
Bjarke, that's funny you mentioned that, because I used to be stationed at Scott Air Force Base, Illinois, and wasn't there another plant down there that was making Lake City ammo as well that's still open in the St. Louis area?
I can tell you about that one.
I think it's the Illinois side. I'm near in Granite City. I think it's where it's at. And I think Alton as well. So, but.
Yeah, there's S&W is in Alton.
Yep. But of course, Greg, they're manufacturing for the government. So it's not like they're producing overage, to the civilian market.
Mm-hmm.
So again, the thumb is being pressed on us gun owners that, here we are, we have the Second Amendment right, but we can't even enjoy or fulfill it because supply.
Well, remember, justice delayed is justice denied, right?
I'm going to look into it myself on
okay.
the company over in Illinois and see if they're still running and see what's going on here. We might have discovered something.
I think so. And if you can't access your right, as the left would say, do you have it?
Yeah.
If you can't access the means, it'd be like taking away our computers for our free speech. If you take away the ammo, then we can't exercise our Second Amendment rights. And that is an infringement.
And
it's every bit as much an infringement as confiscating guns. Go ahead. Who's that? Bjarke?
And see, that's what I believe, Greg. Is like, I think they know that as the left, they know they can't take all our firearms. I mean, we as Americans have a lot, and there's a lot of voting accidents out there. But I think they can control what makes the firearms run is the fuel, which is the ammo. So I think if they know they can have that, they're going to have a leg in the fight, because we can only fight back so much. Let's say if there was a big civil war or something. Yeah, we have all the guns, but we don't have ammo to run it. So I think that's where they're trying to get that control.
Yeah,
they're trying to serialize bullets.
Go ahead.
Put serial numbers on bullets. As a politician in Missouri, state legislature, was sponsoring a bill that would ask for that.
Yeah, and I think President Obama, I remember back, a while back, he was trying to make it where the powder was, it was supposed to have like an expiration date, like it would go sour more or less inside the bullet.
Neutering crystals. Well, they still find Civil War guns.
Yeah.
If they're loaded, they still fire. They were talking, cap and ball, muskets. It's fascinating.
I tell you, the best thing that will run right now is which we found in Afghan. We found, ammo from the 80s. In like the big, large sardine can things, ran great. So, yeah, something has to give.
But this is a civil rights gun. This is why I want to make gun ownership an immutable group under the Civil Rights Act. That your civil right, to your firearms. And like the left says, justice delayed is justice denied. Well, the means to a right denied is a means to a right delayed. Restricted is the right restricted. So if you restrict the means to exercise that right, you're restricting that right. So this is actually a Second Amendment violation. To restrict the Americans' access to ammunition and to guns. And this is something people forget, too. They're all out for buying guns. Guns, they never report ammo sales. They always report gun sales. But people have to realize, you're better off with fewer guns and more ammunition and more practice.
Yeah, exactly.
Some
people aren't going to buy a gazillion guns, but they're going to buy one gun and always use enough ammo. It's kind of like buying, a kitchen pan. You're not going to buy a bunch of kitchen pans, but you're going to buy a bunch of bacon. Use in it, so
yeah,
that's how I kind of explained to everybody. But.
Yeah, no, it's okay. Yeah, Jeanette.
In Illinois,
we'll get Jeanette back
in Illinois. If you have a bullet in your pocket, you had better have a Illinois FOID for that caliber gun that has been issued to you. If not, you're in trouble.
Yeah, Jeanette, that's another thing. Is there any, like, special permits you have to have in New Zealand to go to the store and purchase a box of ammo, like if Yaki was saying in Illinois, they had a thing, it's called a firearms owner identification card. You can't even go and look at a gun and touch it without producing your FOID card there, which is a Second Amendment violation. So
New Zealand,
I was just
interested what
you guys had there.
Yeah, we have what we call the New Zealand Firearms License. It's a theory test that you must do underneath the under the vision of the police of New Zealand, basically. And they issue you with a what we call an A category, which allows you a 22 double-barrel shotgun and a rifle of less than 10 rounds, I think. So that's your A category. Anything else other than that, and it's categorized. So like pistols, a different category with different restrictions. Collectors, different category, different restrictions. And dealers, another license again. So yeah, we're licensed, and then we have to fulfill the requirements of each category going down from that. So you can't buy ammunition without a firearms license. So if a wife goes into the local sports shop to buy ammo for her husband, and she hasn't got a license, she can't buy it for her husband. The husband has to go in and get it.
I got a question
and
for. I got a question for both Jeanette and Chappie, probably Pianki too. But if in New Zealand, is there enough of a shooting constituency of people that want their gun rights back, that if we actually introduce repeals of some of these laws in citizen legislation and things like, you know, tax credits, tax deductions, or ways to provide to make it easier to own guns, are there enough people that might get behind that and start, you know, maybe having that as a lobbying campaign, you know, like the truckers are doing? Or can we add what we're doing to the trucker convoy, that while we're at it, we're getting our gun rights back as well as getting these mandates gone? Would this be a thing to combine or do separately, and is there a constituency for it that would help the legislation that we write here? Jeanette, what do you think?
Something that I've noticed over the last 2 years since the China virus has been rampantly running around everybody's head is how apathetic people have become.
Okay.
And while at the beginning, after the initial massacre at the mosque in Christchurch, which kicked off the New Zealand confiscation, everybody was front and center and raising fists and they're never going to take my guns off me, da, da, da. Now they have. There is this very small minority that are still very, very sour about how things went.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough to make any difference, because the media, which has been bought by our government, have basically portrayed any firearms owners to be white supremacists, Nazis, gun nuts, and we don't ever want to be like the US.
Well, if I remember my history,
it's always been the catch cry.
Didn't the Nazis confiscate the guns? That's kind of an ironic little twist,
yeah.
Don't you think?
It is. It is.
Point out the hypocrisy here, but go ahead. Yeah.
The irony, it's just, and that's just that the amount of people that can actually, that know the history, know how things have gone down.
Yeah.
It's that indoctrination through schools. This is what I've been taught since I started school, so it must be right. Mum and Dad must be wrong. The teachers are getting these kids at such a young age, and they're getting this stuff taught to them. And unless they've got parents that are showing a very keen interest, which seems to be waning in a heck of a lot of cases, the kids just learn what they're taught at school, and they get sent out onto the free world and told that you're entitled to this, and this is wrong, and this never happened, and I don't know how you can break that cycle now. Because there's so many of them out there that believe all this BS, it's just scary.
Yeah, it's getting a lot tougher.
Your children are taught in schools about white supremacists?
They have started bringing, New Zealand has just started a segregationalist type schooling and healthcare. So, yeah, it's going to hell in a handbasket, to be honest.
Yeah, Pianki's got a good point, though, because most of New Zealand's white, if I remember.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, what about black supremacists?
That's opening a new can of worms, isn't it?
Oh, we do that. Listen, this is what we talk about here, you know, and we have some fascinating race discussions. Pianki's absolutely right. I think I did a show on black privilege and black supremacy. I'm going to do more of them, especially in terms of what's going on in this country here with a bunch of different stuff. But yeah, let's, you know, how can a predominantly white country have white supremacists? And what exactly are they going to advocate? The removal of white people?
What they've advocated is the current government has started what they call the Three Waters Project, and they're basically handing all the water rights back to what they say is the indigenous people, but they're not. So the Maori are going to own the rights to all the water in New Zealand, and they're going to start charging. Now, the Maori in New Zealand is approximately 15 to 20% of the population, so they are the minority. And we are quite a multicultural society in New Zealand. We have a heck of a lot of Asian people, a lot of mainly Asian people living there now, mostly white. Caucasian is probably 60 to 70%, the rest Maori, Asian, Islanders. So, yeah, the government's pandering to the minority and they're getting away with it. They're changing names on landmarks. They're doing all that sort of stuff to push it, to really keep just even the local news now, they have to use the Maori names for landmarks and they can't. Yeah, it's just pandering.
So you guys are dealing with what we're dealing with here. It's a worldwide epidemic, right? That, you know, they're trying to change history.
Yep.
Well, this is what I found talking to Jen Clark in Australia, is that the monuments are coming down. The COVID restrictions are all the same. They all hit at the same time. All the mandates are the same. All the indoctrination in school is the same. And it's all coming about at the same time. That's not a coincidence, folks. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's what we're experiencing right now. What I'm encouraged by is the fact that there's worldwide resistance coming out to this. You look at France and Belgium and Holland and Israel and Canada and Australia and New Zealand. You know, there is resistance, not as much as we need. You know, but Canada's kind of leading the way, and I'm kind of a little disappointed that we didn't lead the way here, you know, being the land of the free and the home of the brave. But we do have a convoy coming up next month, and it's already being, you know, Brandon's goons, you know, at the Department of Homeland Security, KGB, are already trying to disrupt that. And I'm working with folks I know. We're going to have Bikers for Trump folks on, Northwest Bikers for Trump, next week. We're going to talk about that because they're going to be working on planning that convoy that's going to be leaving from Los Angeles, you know, in next month.
Mm. You know the difference in conspiracy theory and fact?
Yeah, go ahead. Jeanette, then Pianki, and then Chappie. Jeanette, go.
The difference between conspiracy and fact is only 6 months.
Yep. Hey, listen, we were the ones that broke that that chloroquine kills COVID March 2nd of 2020 and broadcast there is no pandemic. This is there's a real virus, but it's got a real cure. It's called chloroquine or hydroxychloroquine. Then we learned about ivermectin. I had Dr. Zelenko on the show. And we were doing this in the spring of 2020. We knew. Ever since then, I've been banned or restricted on social media ever since. So this is why I'm waiting for Trump Social to come out, or True Social, so we can actually start, you know, really getting our message out here. But we've been talking about this stuff for 2 years. And so, you know, we're preaching in the converted here. This is why I want to push the agenda ahead and say we have to get more outrageous and more demanding of what it means. We have to teach the world what it really means to be free. And to be free does not mean you're free to sit on your butt and collect government money and have them take care of your national health care and take away everything and give you a government education. You cannot have a free society with a government education. You can't. No. The most fundamental thing we need to do is to abolish all government education. This is where I'm going with some of this stuff here. You know, and so this is not going to be an easy challenge, but we have to do it. We have to get rid of the holding taxes. We have to get rid of these corporate monopolies. We have to open up the market so that new ammo companies can come. All these things we need to do, and it's going to take you know, whole coalitions across this country in different constituencies. That's why I need the gun folks working on the gun stuff. You know, I need the education folks working on the education stuff. And as we build constituencies, we need talk show hosts coordinated across the country to start broadcasting this stuff to supply the government with how we consent to be governed. And if they don't do it, we need to throw their asses out. That's where we need to go.
You know, I sent you three emails or three stories. One, you had a black female D.C. police officer that beat a white woman to death there on January 6th, and nothing happened to her. Another story.
Yeah, I've got them. I just haven't seen them all. But, yeah, we should talk about those next week. We should, you know, pick an hour.
Yeah, and one other.
Yeah.
The Amish in Holmes County, Ohio, they wouldn't take their stimulus checks. They gave them to charity and wouldn't take them.
You know, the Americans used to be that way with the Depression. You couldn't give welfare to Americans. That's why they created the CCC, the Conservation Corps, Civilian Conservation Corps, and the WPA, the Works Progress Administration, because Americans would not take welfare. It was against their character to get paid for not working. That's where we were back in the 30s. That's the generation that fought World War II. Okay.
Yeah, that fits you another on the material. That's being in a library, sexual explicit material that's being presented to the children. And I tell you, it's some grouchy stuff, man. You need to look at that.
But that's part of the issue. This is why they're making genders, if they can say the sexes aren't male and female, they can say anything. The whole idea is to make, take away shame, take away embarrassment, take away everything, take away every quality you have, break you down to be nothing so they can rebuild you as a good communist. I mean, this is all organized stuff. This has been the works for 100 years. We just didn't know it. Well, now we do know it. And the counter to it, I believe, the peaceful revolution is through us writing the laws that we consent to be governed by. That's why I keep coming back to that. We only got about 4 minutes left. I should play a couple of things because I haven't. But yeah. I better end this now just because I promised some folks I would play some things. Jeanette, Chappie, Pianki, thank you so much. Thanks to Derek and Shirley who were on earlier. And let me just play a couple of things. And you guys get in touch with each other. You're all on Facebook, I think. Pretty sure. Well, Jeanette, I'm not sure. Yep. Anyway, we can get you all connected somehow, some way. Get in touch with me after the show at greg@writeyourlaws.com. Let me play some things for you guys, and we'll be back Monday, 6 o'clock Central, 7 Eastern, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific, and the rest of it, you guys figure out. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio. I am proud to announce a new feature of Action Radio. Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to bring to you an education in our founding documents, one focused subject at a time. Each week, we will have a new presentation drawing from the Declaration of Independence, the Federalist Papers, the Constitution, and who knows, maybe back to Magna Carta. So enjoy learning about your God-given birthright in these vignettes. Share them with your children, your grandchildren, your parents, your friends, in fact, anyone you want to serve, an accessible yet poignant introduction to a lifelong journey in the study and practice of liberty. The whole purpose of these presentations is to inform a generation or two of Americans about the true meaning of our founding. They should have gotten that in school. Since that is not happening, Santa Rosa Volunteers has decided to help change that. If you want to learn more about Santa Rosa Volunteers and maybe get involved, their website is srv1776.com. srv1776.com.
Their email is srv1776@protonmail.com. It is their goal to share local community information while encouraging everyone to feel welcomed and informed. Santa Rosa Volunteers says, "Arise, patriots! It is time to take our republic back. The sleeping giant awakens. Arise, patriots, and get involved." Until next time, this is Greg Penglis for Action Radio.
All right, in the 30 seconds I have left, I'm having a little trouble with uploading new Santa Rosa Volunteers pieces. But if you want to hear them all, we have a YouTube channel, Action Radio Founding Moments. That's Action Radio Founding Moments on YouTube. And you can listen to the 25 episodes I have. 26th one, you know, that's the one that couldn't be uploaded. And so we're trying to get that all fixed. Anyway, this has been an incredible show. Please listen all week. You know, catch up with what's going on. And if you want to be an activist and get involved in the citizen legislator, this is the place to do it. So our show here is at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative website is writeyourlaws.com, WriteYourLaws. Email for me is greg@writeyourlaws.com. We are now with Give, Send, Go. And if you want to contribute to Action Radio, givesendgo.com/Action Radio. Back Monday morning at 6 o'clock Central Time.